Epstein.
The US seizes a Russian-flagged vessel in the North Atlantic with support from the UK. Were we right to do so? Plus...
Were troops to be deployed under the declaration signed, I would put that matter to the House for a vote.
The Prime Minister says MPs would get a say on the deployment of UK troops in Ukraine. Which way would you vote? And...
They're learning we want them to experience different sorts of roads and different scenarios, driving at night, driving in adverse weather.
Roads Minister Lillian Greenwood, learner drivers could face a 6-month wait between their theory and practical tests, but a graduated driving licence will not be brought in. Do you think that's the right move?
On your radio, on the LBC app, and...
Play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation, this is LBC.
From Global's newsroom at 10 o'clock, the Defence Secretary has updated MPs on why British forces supported the US seizure of a Russian-flagged tanker in the North Atlantic earlier.
To achieve three objectives. First, to enforce counter-Iran sanctions. Second, to tackle the global security threat posed by expanding shadowy maritime activity. And third, to reinforce British homeland defence and security in this era of rising threat.
John Healey told MPs it was part of a shadow fleet of ships which transported sanctioned oil. The Venezuelan-linked vessel, previously known as Bella One, was captured as it travelled through waters between Iceland and Scotland. The US Secretary of State says he will meet with Danish officials next week following Donald Trump's renewed threat to annex Greenland. The president has repeatedly said he could take it over for national security reasons, but European leaders, including Sir Keir Starmer, say the semi-autonomous Danish territory belongs to its people. Downing Street has been unable to say whether a vote by MPs on sending British troops to Ukraine in the event of a ceasefire would be binding. Sir Keir Starmer says the Commons will have its say on the final number of soldiers deployed. One person's died after officers on a large-scale immigration operation in the US city of Minneapolis shot a driver. The US Department of Homeland Security claims a woman had weaponized her vehicle. Well, LBC's Washington correspondent Simon Marks says that is being disputed.
A furious mayor of Minneapolis, Jacob Fry, has completely contradicted that version of events provided by ICE, says that he has reviewed the tape of the incident and using cadences that we cannot repeat on a family radio station, he has made it very, very clear where he would like ICE to go.
Former England striker and manager Kevin Keegan will undergo treatment after being diagnosed with cancer. He was recently admitted to hospital with abdominal problems. And the UK is to brace for heavy snowfall and strong winds from the first named storm of the year. 5 to 10 centimetres of snow is likely to fall on Wales and the Midlands tomorrow. In the city, the FTSE 100's closed down 74 points at 10,048. The pound buys $1.34 and €1.15. LBC weather, patchy rain for Northern Ireland, Wales and West England tonight. Snow for Northern and Central Scotland, a low of -7. From Global's newsroom, for LBC, I'm Daryl Jackson.
This is LBC from Global, leading Britain's conversation with Henry Reilly.
3 minutes past 10 is the time. Good evening. You're listening to Henry Reilly here on LBC. In for Ben Kentish coming up.
Enforcing peace means being prepared to overmatch the Russians, and that means also being prepared to fight them if necessary.
So we could have British troops firing on Russian military personnel in Ukraine?
We could.
That's got to make you nervous, sir.
Yeah, it is, but it's realistic.
That's not just some commentator, by the way. That's the former Deputy Supreme Commander of NATO telling LBC's Nick Ferrari that British forces could fire on Russian troops in Ukraine if troops are deployed. We'll discuss that later. Plus...
To ICE, get the out of Minneapolis. We do not want you here. Your stated reason for being in this city is to create some kind of safety, and you are doing exactly the opposite.
Strong words there from Minneapolis Mayor Jacob Frey. A U.S. immigration officer fatally shoots a woman in Minneapolis. The Department for Homeland Security, though, says the shooting happened as a violent rioter attempted to run over an immigration officer. What's the truth? We'll have the latest later on in the show.
Ordinary, everyday women who are being sexualized, who Grok is putting up those images of them in bikinis.
MPs are now urging a boycott of Elon Musk's ex over the Grok AI undressing as the Women and Equalities Committee says they'll now stop using the social media site. Will you? And...
I've been driving in my car. It's not quite
better Jaguar.
Younger drivers say that proposals including a six-month wait between taking their theory and practical tests are condescending. But should the government have gone further and introduced a graduated licence, we'll discuss.
Call 0345 6060 973. Text 84850. This is LBC.
Good evening to you. Henry Riley with you here on LBC this hour.
Just moments ago, sources just confirmed to CNN that the United States has seized an oil tanker that had been linked to Venezuela. Now, Russia is responding to the seizure, saying they are the owners of this vessel.
CNN breaking the news that the Marinera, a Venezuelan-linked vessel previously known as Bella One, was captured in U.S. or by U.S. forces today as it travelled north and eastwards towards Russia, essentially in Icelandic waters. It was between Iceland and Scotland. We learned earlier on today that British armed forces provided support to help the US's seizure. The Defence Secretary John Healey's been speaking in the House of Commons this evening.
Today, the US conducted a military operation to intercept the motor vessel Bella One in the North Atlantic on its way to Russia. The UK, at the request of the US, supported this operation as part of global efforts to crack down on sanctions busting and shadow shipping activity. The Bella One was falsely flagged. It was falsely flagged and subject to US counter-Iran sanctions.
RAF surveillance aircraft and a naval supply ship, the RFA Tide Force, were among the British military assets which took part in the operation to help seize the ship, which was bound for, we believe, a Russian Arctic port. The Marinera is accused of being part of a shadow fleet carrying oil for Venezuela, Russia and Iran and breaking US sanctions. The US Coast Guard had a warrant to seize the ship, and they had actually tried to board it last month in the Caribbean. The former Russian Prime Minister Mikhail Kasanov told my LBC colleague Andrew Marr.
It's definitely that already Mr. Putin looks weak. And in fact, after Maduro's capture and silence, Mr. Putin keeps. I think that is already clear for everyone, for all the supporters all over the world, supporters of Putin, that Putin is not so strong as it's expected by them. It is absolutely, absolutely just getting weaker and weaker every day. And I think that already his political prestige is going down.
Now, we learned that the tanker dramatically changed course. It changed its name and re-registered. I think it was Guyana originally, and changed to be a Russian vessel. And for 2 weeks, the US have been pursuing it. It's been sanctioned since 2024. And wait for this, has moved 7.3 million barrels of oil, we believe, on behalf of Iran, says the UK government. John Healey said the proceeds of which have undoubtedly been used to finance terrorism, as well as the threats and instability across the world. Now, the UK has played a role in this. To what extent, we don't know, but RAF surveillance aircraft and naval supply ship to seize this Russian-flagged vessel in the North Atlantic. This is huge news. I mean, this is, again, when it comes to a confrontation with Russia, this is about as close as we've got in recent months. Clearly, based on the intelligence we have, I would suggest you'd be pretty mad to suggest that the UK shouldn't have helped America. I mean, clearly they have had this ship sanctioned for a long time. I'm by no means a military expert, but given its links to Russia, to Iran, therefore to terrorism, and therefore to some pretty nasty regimes, to have this ship sort of lurking in Icelandic waters, not a million miles away from Scotland, is clearly a threat. And we have not seen ships such as this, and if you track its movements recently, it's been behaving mysteriously, and there has to be a point whereby we say we're not going to put up with it. And so I think, based on the intelligence I've seen and that's been out in the media, it seems that we're absolutely right to have supported the US in doing this. What do you think, though? Do you think we were right to do so? There's been a lot of talk in recent days about President Trump and Venezuela and Greenland. I wonder if you think, actually, we shouldn't be supporting an ally that is led by Donald Trump. I would say that you're
slightly mad if you think that, but nonetheless, let's have the debate. 0345 6060 973 is the number to call. It can make you feel uncomfortable, yes, but ultimately, this is about our own defence and security. How concerned are you, more broadly as well, that tensions with Russia do seem to be escalating, that now this is a situation where we have been directly involved in a US seizure of a Russian naval ship? 0345 6060 973. Undoubtedly, I would say an escalation. What does Daniel L. Davis say? He's a former lieutenant colonel in the, or lieutenant, I should say, in the United States, in the US Army, who's now a senior fellow and military expert at the American think tank Defense Priorities. He's also host of a YouTube show called the Daniel Davis Deep Dive Show. And I'm pleased to say that Mr. Davis joins me on the line now. Can I ask for your opinion on this, Mr. Davis? Is this escalation between the US, the UK, and Russia, would you say?
Well, it's unquestionably an escalation. The question is, where is it going to go, and what is the value of it? I mean, these ships have been applying the waters really throughout this entire war, ever since we've had all these sanctions on them, and we have not interdicted them. There, by some counts, are somewhere between around 1,200 of these ships in the so-called shadow fleet, and so this is a small number of them. Ukraine has actually attacked several of them here, I think four in the last month or so. So this, it's kind of been escalating and stepping up even before this. But the question is, what are we going to do if Russia has a reaction to this? Because the claim that Russia is making right now is that the law of the open seas says that taking a tanker like this on the open seas is an act of piracy and we can't do it. Our reaction, I think some of the British officials earlier today said, well, no, you only have the right to the open seas if it's innocent travel. And this is not, because it's sanctioned, etc. Problem with that is it's the interpretation of who can say what something is either innocent or not. And if, just imagine that you're going to have to open a can of worms here, that the potentially the Russians can say, you know what, anything that we declare that's on the open seas that's heading towards Ukraine, that's going to help kill Russians in that war, we think is hostile and it's not innocent. Therefore, we can seize it on the open seas. And we've set this precedence now that if we declare something unfriendly, we can take it on the open seas. And so how are we going to say that Russia can't do the same if they declare it so? And so that's what remains to be seen, is what the Russian reaction is going to be. So far, it's been pretty muted, at least in the next the few hours. Russia's pretty famous about not reacting off the cuff. But I imagine they're going to do something, because they're very famous for a tit-for-tat kind of operation. And I would not be at all surprised to see that some Western ship is seized on the seas by the Russian ships later on.
You think that could be the next stage of this escalation, that a Western ship is seized or attacked?
It certainly could be. And again, we have to ask the question, what is the value and the benefit to doing this? We haven't done it for the majority of nearly the 4 years that this war has been going on. Why do we think it's to start now? And what is the value? What is the benefit now that we haven't derived from doing it later? And if Russia reacts and responds, is that going to help our side out or not? And I think that's an open question that hasn't been answered yet.
How significant is it? Because when we read these reports today, clearly in the UK, this is a huge deal, helping the US to seize a Russian oil tanker. In the grand scheme of what we have seen in the last 4 years, as you say, since February 2022, how significant is this as an action by the US and Britain?
Yeah, at the moment, it's a moderate. It's not insignificant, but it's not huge either at the moment. Again, it depends on what happens next. I mean, does this become a normal thing? And instead of four ships being attacked and now two being seized, what if it's 15 or 20? And, you know, what if this starts to affect the Russian, selling of oil or whatever on buying and selling on the international market or anything else for that matter? Because Russia has been very risk averse. Putin has been very risk averse so far in not responding very strongly to a lot of the things that we've done over the 4 years, where we've escalated several things up, because Putin wants to keep the war contained within Ukraine, because he is very much convinced that he has already won this war if it stays conventional inside the Ukraine. So they're going slow because they want to minimize their casualties and they feel they can win it. If he calculates that doing something in response to this could put that at risk, he probably won't do it. And many will regard that as a weakness on the Russian side. But if he regards these things, they say step up, and it's going to cost him if he doesn't do anything, then I think you'll see Russia take some action. And again, it's impossible to say what it is, but it probably will be something commensurate with what we're doing.
How common is this to see a ship such as it's sort of got various names here, Bella One, it was previously called the Marinera now. How common is it to see them change course and for them to paint a Russian flag seemingly on the side? What's the significance of that? Because we know that Vladimir Putin did try and, we understand, send some sort of submarine to defend it.
Yeah, that's not uncommon at all. These ships reflag as a matter of course. It's pretty routine, in fact. And what it appears from what I've been able to see from open source reports is that this was reflagged on, I want to say, the 24th of December into Russian. So it was pretty clearly they were attempting to put a Russian name on it that they thought might prevent it from being taken. And obviously that did not prove to be the case here. And in terms of these submarines, I think that's a subtle comment because they're obviously not going to take any action. But I doubt that that's going to make anybody in the West do anything because nobody expects that Russia to surface a submarine and attack, you know, an American or British warship over something like this. But it does show that they're paying attention. And, you know, like I said, if this continues on and if it starts to be bigger in numbers and it starts to actually impact the Russian sale and delivery of oil, you know, many things become possible it's not a safe thing to always assume that Russia will never do anything and keep escalating up because we may find to our chagrin that one day they do.
Thank you very much for your time. Always appreciated. Daniel L. Davis is a former lieutenant colonel in the U.S. Army who's now senior fellow and military expert at the American think tank Defense Priorities. He also hosts the Daniel Davis Deep Dive show, which is available on YouTube. Keen for your views. Are you convinced by what you've heard from the lieutenant colonel in the U.S. Army? Do you think this is in some way sort of poking the bear? I hate to use that phrase, but that is sort of the gist of what we were getting there, that there will be some tit-for-tat response. Ultimately, it was a Russian ship in international waters, but just off the coast of Scotland, in between Iceland and well, essentially the UK, of course. How else were we meant to respond than supporting the US by deploying, as we heard in this case, RAF surveillance aircraft and a naval supply ship? It seems to me to be sensible, but what do you think? 0345-6060-973 is the number to call. And where does this go next, do you think? 1016.
This is LBC.
Octopus Energy. Great value and outstanding customer service. Recommended by Which? 8 years running. Octopus Energy.
Hi, just leaving work now. Sorry it's a bit loud. Basically, so I was thinking we could get Mackey's tonight. Had a Big Mac on my mind all day, and delivery fee on the app is now from 99p. So, you in? Of course you are. Love you. Bye.
Exclusively on the McDonald's app. 18 plus. Service fee and small order fee may apply. Participating restaurants. Serving times and T's and C's apply.
Hiya, Kenny the hamster here. Proud pet of Doug and Carol. Hey, oh, looks like my mum Carol's off out with the girls again. I tell you, since she took that quick NHS Healthy Choices quiz, she's drinking less, but going out more. And to think, she thought being healthy would mean being boring. You might want to give it a go yourself.
Go, girlfriend!
Take your first little step to healthy. Search NHS Healthy Choices quiz to get a score and a simple plan to follow.
There's one green bottle sat on my fridge shelf. This green and white bottle that supports my gut health. Beautiful by nature and biotiful by name. It's the tastiest way to up my gut health game.
Biotiful Gut Health. Upgrade your yogurt to the UK's number one kefir and reset your gut health with Biotiful. Kefir is a source of calcium which contributes to the normal function of digestive enzymes. For verification of UK's number one kefir, see biotifulguthealth.com/radio.
Henry Reilly on LBC. Call 0345-6060-973.
10:18 is the time. Good evening. You're listening to Henry Reilly here on LBC. We're only a week into the new year. I'm going to make a habit of saying this. A week into the new year, and it's unbelievable. We're now in a situation whereby we have, we have supported the US in seizing a Russian-backed vessel. And I'm keen to know your thoughts this evening. Do you think this is risking a retaliation? I think ultimately we're probably right to seize this Russian oil tanker, even if it does risk retaliation, because you can't be in a situation whereby it's hanging off the coast of the UK, where it's essentially in Icelandic waters. And do you think, though, it risks dragging us into a wider conflict? Do you think? 0345 60 60 973 is the number to call. And how does this change the dynamic, do you think, between Donald Trump and Vladimir Putin? Because there's been this constant suggestion, charge levied at President Trump, that he is too close to Vladimir Putin. And you can understand why, given he called the Russian president just before he most recently met with Zelensky, President Zelensky, at Mar-a-Lago in Florida, his home, during the Christmas period. So you can understand why that charge is levied. But when you have the US seizing a Russian-backed ship here, a vessel, then what do you think that ends up doing to their relationship between Vladimir Putin and Donald Trump? Is it just for show? Is this starting to show a fracture? Could it, in a sort of perverse way, be good news for Ukraine, do you think? 0345 60 60 973 is the number to call. You can text 84850 or ask Alexa to send a comment to LBC. Joe is in Brighton. Hello, Joe.
Hi. Hi, Henry. This is a miscalculation.
By who? The Brits?
By America and Britain. And we don't even need to put troops now into Ukraine. Because you know what's happening? Iran factories what produce 40% of the drones being used in Russia has stopped producing. And so all they need to do now, and what's going to happen, all these IRC people are going to the villages on motorbikes and buses, and they're setting them alight. All they need to do is go into Iran and completely bomb all the IRGC coming into the villages on the motorways by Apache helicopter. Once that regime has collapsed, Russia gets no more drones. Iran supplies 40% of the drones.
It's not going to be a particularly easy operation to go and collapse the IRGC in Iran,
well,
is it?
We did it in Iraq. We just flew on they came out with their tanks and their vehicles, the Americans just bombed the highways. We all know they're coming in on motorbikes. We've seen the pictures of them coming into villages and into hospitals on motorbikes.
But what are we meant to do when we have this ship just off our seas that is essentially hanging around and we know has been up to no good?
Listen, it's empty. Listen, the strategy here, if I was the American commanders now, I'll be going for Iran because they sponsor all these splinter groups. You choke Iran, the Islamic government, all these terrorist groups are staffed of money. And you all. And then what you will find, China is scared of America right now.
Right.
The only option they have is nuclear missiles. And I'll tell you why. We know that 7 air defense systems were sold to Venezuela.
Why is China scared of America?
Oh, because they sold them 7 air defense systems claiming they could shoot B-52 bombers out of the sky. They were turned to toast. You heard what Trump said. We sent 154 planes, and then we knocked out all the electricity in Venezuela. They all were using candles, and everybody laughed in the room, right? So we know they're rubbish. And during that 12-day war with Israel, you had Russian air defense systems in over Iran, and they got turned to toast. So what we've done is we've gone from showing America that, and Trump is ill. We saw the press conference where he was mumbling at the beginning when they done the Mandura thing. We've been told by Robert De Niro, we've been told by many people around that Trump is a narcissist. Everyone's calling him, he has got a godfather complex. No, he's got a Tony Montana from Scarface. I'm a narcissist. If I'm ill, I'm going to take you all out. And Russia, just like what we saw, I said to a load of people, nothing will happen with the Iranian government until the middle class is affected. And then you've got all the bizarre people coming out now, all the shopkeepers, because they've got children abroad in countries, going to the best universities, paying for their children to be in the West, to be taught at the best universities. I know this because I'm in Brighton. And when they can't send money to their children, that's when they came out onto the street. They can't even afford to buy a banana without it costing £20.
Sure, hold on, Joe, we're going around the houses here. Where is this going to lead, do you think? Where does this go next?
If we keep on doing these ships, which were empty, that's pointless. What they should be doing is taking those
Apache helicopters. But hold on, Joe, at what point do you allow vessels to be engaging in malign activity just off our waters?
Well, look, vessels don't sponsor terrorist groups, Hezbollah, and all these factions what are going across Europe and attacking churches and attacking the synagogues and selling books and then sending the money to their terrorist groups abroad. We know all this is happening, right? We saw this on Undercover Moss. We need to choke Iran. Well, what they need to do is choke Iran, stop all the production, then you starve the Russians from getting those missiles, and then Russia will say, well, Trump is obviously a bit ill, and he's got a kind of complex. It's all about me. You muck with me, I will take us all out.
Thank you very much. Appreciated. 0345-6060973 is the number to call. Joe getting us started there. This comes in from Lucy, who says, aside from a huge distraction from the Epstein files, I can't work out if Trump really is Putin's asset or if there's a new world carve-up going on, or seeing as Trump was so visibly frightened following his cut short meeting with Putin in Alaska and Putin's obvious alliance with China and North Korea, if Trump is ramping up for war. I don't know what to make of it all. I don't think you're right there, Lucy. We're trying to work it out. And William says, every country who has a American base should tell Trump that if he invades Greenland, then he has 48 hours to close the base. No shore, leave no passes into the community. Basically, house arrest. With regards to the oil tankers, it's piracy. Trumped up reasons to invade Venezuela. Nothing to do with us, nothing to do with America. China has been the main beneficiary of Venezuelan oil, so watch this space. Well, William, but again, we're talking about a vessel that was travelling northwards through waters between Iceland and Scotland. The idea that you just sort of wait around and you don't support the US in that, I think is for the birds. David's in Banbury. Hi, David.
Oh, hi, Henry. Yes, I think America is a rogue state and we shouldn't join in on anything. And I support Venezuela and Russia because I think they're victims of America's desire to control the planet.
Right. How have you arrived at that conclusion where you now have sympathy with Venezuela and Russia?
Well, Venezuela, the people have been starving and destitute. And under Hugo Chavez, he was very popular with the people because they're booming and America's placed sanctions on Venezuela. And that's caused Hugo Chavez to be rough, maybe break international law on treating his opponents. But it's essentially America's fault of putting sanctions on a very poor country. And this latest attack on Venezuela is outrageous. It breaks international law. And Britain shouldn't be helping America seize ships coming from Venezuela. And as for Russia, Russia was defending its own borders. It doesn't want NATO missiles.
Hold on, why is it in Icelandic waters then? Or why is it just off the coast, essentially, in between Iceland and Scotland?
Well, I think they might have the right in certain circumstances, but seeing the conditions...
Hold on, I was heading back up towards Russia.
Yeah, but the ship, I mean, it might have the right, but Russia is a very tense relation between Russia and America. Effectively, we're at war with Russia right now. And if you keep poking it, it's liable to escalate the conflict, and you'll end up with World War III.
I don't know how you are siding with someone like Hugo Chavez.
Well, I think personally, I don't always trust the media because they got it completely wrong in Gaza. Our friends, the Israelis...
You said earlier on that you sympathise with Hugo Chavez, for example. I mean, ultimately, Venezuela's been completely run into the ground by him and Maduro.
Yes, but the problem is the price of... I mean, they are to blame for mismanaging the economy, but the price of oil has collapsed, and America's placed sanctions on Venezuela.
But, oil production in Venezuela, I mean, a lot of that was their fault. The production was woeful, considering the amount of reserve they had.
Yeah, but the...
They silenced critics on TV stations and radio outlets.
Yeah, the thing is...
They packed the courts, tried to change... I mean... Maduro against his own citizens. I mean, it was a reprehensible regime.
But America had no right to kidnap him.
Well, that's another story. But to defend that does not automatically mean that you defend the regime. As for Russia, would you like to withdraw that, David?
No, I don't. I support Russia. I think Britain is out, America is out to get Russia and Britain. I don't think I don't support Keir Starmer. I think he's a war criminal by supporting Israel.
But hold on, David. You can support. You can have whatever view you want of Keir Starmer. How on earth, 4 years into Russia's illegal invasion in Ukraine, are you now supporting Russia?
It had to invade Ukraine because Ukraine. what's he called, Zelensky was persuaded to declare that he wants to join NATO. And, of course, that was very provocative to Russia because he realises NATO is out to get Russia.
Well, heaven forfend that a independent sovereign country wants to join NATO. Do you ever think, David, the reason they might want to join NATO was because they are bordering Russia?
Yeah, but, I mean, if Cuba suddenly decided to put Russian missiles in Cuba, America would threaten it with annihilation. So I think the same applies.
So how in one breath can you say the US was wrong to invade Venezuela because that's a sovereign country, and then say that President Putin's right to invade Ukraine, which is another sovereign country?
World War III is circumstances are completely different. Venezuela hasn't got nuclear weapons. And Russia's got good reason to distrust America.
Ukraine gave up its nuclear weapons, if you remember, under the Budapest Memorandum.
The trouble is we're not playing with tiddlywinks, we're playing with the end of the planet. Mm. I mean, if Putin doesn't get tough, he's going to be thrown, he's going to be kicked out by his generals who are much more militant than Putin.
Well, respectfully, that's Russian internal politics. I couldn't care less. They can't go around invading a sovereign country.
Well, America does. It's invaded Iraq.
But hold on. David, we're talking about... You are, for some reason, justifying Vladimir Putin's actions. I can't quite work out why. You don't sound like a sort of Lord Haw-Haw type, but what you're saying does read like that, I'm afraid.
I think Putin has to defend Russia. He's a patriot. He might kill his opponents, but that's by the way. A lot of people kill opponents.
What do you mean that's by the by?
I mean, Russia is got a right to be fearful of NATO placing missiles on its border because it would give us a first strike capability, and Russia isn't going to allow it. I don't blame it.
I think you need to have to be honest, a long, hard look at yourself, David, because if you, after everything we've known 4 years on, and not even just since you go back to Crimea in 2014, for example, that you are still defending Vladimir Putin and still making excuses for Russia I can't believe that there are still people in the UK who are backing Vladimir Putin. It seems unbelievable to me. David, thank you. More calls in a moment. 0345 6060973 is the number to call. Well, I mean, when you hear people like David, does it think, well, actually, maybe we should be tougher against Russia and we are right to help the US seize this tanker in between Iceland and Scotland in waters not terribly far away from where our coast is. 0345-6060-973, the number to call. Also,
what we're seeing is the consequences of governance designed to generate fear, headlines, and conflict. It's governing by reality TV.
We'll bring you the latest. That was Governor Tim Walz, by the way, of Minnesota. In Minneapolis, in that state, a US immigration officer has fatally shot a woman. We'll bring you the latest in a moment. 10:31 the time, the news with Daryl Jackson.
The Defence Secretary says British forces have made the world safer by supporting the US seizure of a Russian-flagged tanker in the North Atlantic. John Healy's told MPs the ship was part of a shadow fleet which transported sanctioned oil. The US Secretary of State says he'll meet with Danish officials next week following Donald Trump's renewed threats to annex Greenland. The president's repeatedly said he could take it over for national security reasons. And former England and Newcastle manager Kevin Keegan has been diagnosed with cancer. His family say he'll now undergo treatment and they've thanked medics for their intervention and ongoing care. LBC weather, patchy cloud and snow showers in Scotland tomorrow, becoming wet and windy for Wales and the southwest through the day. Rain will turn to snow for central England and Wales by the evening, a high of 9 degrees.
LBC, Nick Ferrari at breakfast.
Coming up tomorrow morning with Nick Ferrari at breakfast, as British spy planes and ships support the US in its operation to save a Russian-flagged oil tanker. Nick will be joined live by former Defence Secretary Dame Penny Morden. Plus, the Prime Minister takes on the Tories and reform over the two-child benefit cap. Nick will hear first from the Work and Pension Secretary, Pat McFadden, as well as the Shadow Chancellor, Sir Mel Stride. All of that and much more coming up with Nick Ferrari at breakfast tomorrow morning from 7 here on LBC.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast. Listen on our free Global Player app or the new LBC app. LBC.
Buying a home on a holiday park was the retreat you always wanted. But then came unexpected site fee increases. And that was before the dramatic loss in value. If you bought a home on a holiday park in the UK, you may have been missold.
HolidayParkAdviceCentre.co.uk could help you receive thousands in compensation. Text ASSIST to 78900. That's ASSIST to 78900.
The following is from TfL.
I got loads of flowers the other day and messages from people I didn't even know. My mates spelled out my name in tea lights and my mom hung my favourite footy shirt on the railings next to the lamppost where I got killed by a nice lady, just someone who thought it was okay to go a few miles an hour over the limit.
Speeding injures or kills over 1,000 people in London every year. Slow down. To the Mayor of London and TfL, every journey matters.
The people of Britain love their spin bikes. They also love moving their card balances to a Barclaycard Platinum Balance Transfer Card with no interest for 36 months and £20 cash back until the 29th of January 2026. A balance transfer fee of 3.45% applies, subject to financial status. T's and C's and exclusions apply. Check if you're eligible at barclaycard.co.uk. Representative example, 24.9% APR representative variable and 24.9% purchase rate per annum based on a £1,200 credit limit.
This is LBC. Message Henry Riley on WhatsApp now. 0345 6060973.
10:35 is the time. Good evening. You're listening to Henry Riley here on LBC, in for Ben Kentish. Coming back to more of your calls in a moment. Your reactions to the UK helping the US in seizing a Russian oil tanker. It doesn't really matter how involved we were. We were involved. That's the sort of gist of it. And keen to know where you think this leaves us. Where do we go next? This is a real escalation, as our guest was saying earlier on, the former lieutenant in the US Army. I mean, this is an escalation. Where does it end up? Are we right to get tougher on Putin? And by Donald Trump doing this, or the US doing this, sort of more generally as a government, do you hope that it could actually be the start of some renewed pressure from the White House, from this White House, towards President Putin, towards Vladimir Putin in Russia? 0345 6060973 is the number to call. A lot of people reacting to that message we had from David, that call we had, sorry, of him sort of spouting Russian propaganda. I mean, I just find it unbelievable. In one breath, saying it's unbelievable that the US invaded a sovereign country in Venezuela and then justifying Vladimir Putin invading Ukraine. It seems absolutely crackers to me. I hope you too. More calls in a moment. 0345 6060973 is the number to call. We are going to briefly move away from this, though, to talk about an emerging and breaking story that is dominating headlines across the pond. A US immigration officer has fatally shot a woman in Minneapolis. This is part of this ICE initiative that you would have heard a lot of from President Trump. A US immigration officer, so say officials, fatally shot this woman. The Department of Homeland Security say the shooting happened as a violent rioter allegedly attempted to run over an immigration officer. The Homeland Security Secretary said the officer defensively shot to protect himself. But it's fair to say that was not the view of the mayor of Minneapolis, Jacob Frey.
To ICE, get the out of Minneapolis. We do not want you here. Your stated reason for being in this city is to create some kind of safety, and you are doing exactly the opposite. People are being hurt. Families are being ripped apart. Long-term Minneapolis residents that have contributed so greatly to our city, to our culture, to our economy are being terrorized, and now somebody is dead.
A furious Mayor Jacob Frey. What of the governor of Minnesota as well? This was Tim Walz.
To Minnesotans, I say this. I feel your anger. I'm angry. They want a show. We can't give it to them. We cannot. If you protest and express your First Amendment rights, please do so peacefully, as you always do. We can't give them what they want. The hearts and minds of the people in this state are on our side. To Americans, I ask you this. Please stand with Minneapolis.
Barry DiNardio is a former U.S. Secret Service agent in Washington, D.C., previously worked in the White House under George Bush and Barack Obama, and joins me now. Thank you very much for joining us, Barry. Can I, well, firstly, get your reaction to this story that is dominating headlines where you are?
Thanks for having me, and my condolences to anybody affected by this. Not the result anybody wants in government or in the community. I had to look at the video about 20 times, to be honest with you, to see exactly what happened. And if you dissect it little by little and replay it over and over and see where that agent came from, which was her passenger side of the vehicle, these agents are not shooting this person when she's going in reverse. It wasn't until she made the decision to then go into drive, and she had an agent in front of her with a pistol drawn, from what I could make out, telling her to stop. And she, it seems to me like she tried to ram a police officer. Now, people don't like this because it's immigration that is doing this. But if they put their local police that they know, or where I live here outside of Washington, the deputy, I'm certainly not going to go and use my car as a missile if there is a deputy in front of me with a gun pointed at me telling me to stop. And that's pretty much the overwhelming percent of Americans think that way. I don't know what this woman was doing. I think she was trying to block them in. That in itself is a crime, and other people have been shot for simply trying to box agents in during these operations.
I have to say, Mr. DiNandio, the governor there, Tim Walz, has said that you're falling for a propaganda machine. He said, I've seen the video, don't believe this propaganda machine. The person is entitled to a full, fair, and investigation. He's refuting what your interpretation of the video is.
Well, I would tell the governor to be a police officer maybe just for 1 week and give it a try, and put himself in front of a car with somebody who's trying to box in lawful operations and police officers, which is illegal in itself. And then when you draw your weapon on somebody, they try to run you over. He's never been in that situation. He doesn't have a clue what he's talking about. He's a politician at the end of the day. But when you dissect the situation, you have to really look at what happened. I would agree, if these officers were shooting her when she's going in reverse, I would have a problem with that, because there's no deadly physical force being initiated. She is trying to escape, which makes another crime on top of whatever they're stopping her for. But she made the decision. She's initially going in reverse. They are not shooting at her. That agent was coming from her passenger side. He just happened to be in the wrong place at the wrong time. I think it happened so fast. He drew his weapon in a last-ditch effort to try to get her to stop and comply. She decided, only her, she made the decision to go forward and try to ram a police officer. And that's what we're losing sight over. It is not okay in any city, any place, anywhere in the whole world to sit, and when a police officer is challenging you, has a gun, telling you to stop, and has lawful authority, you cannot ram him and potentially kill him. And maybe not the answer most people want to hear, but based on what I'm seeing, this officer is going to get off via federal law. He is not going to get prosecuted. I'm sure they will try. But I think it's a legal shoot at this juncture.
Fair enough. The video that I've seen, though, is you see this SUV, this maroon SUV, backing away from ICE officers as they approach the car, and they try and open the driver's door. And then one officer can be seen partially in front of the car as the driver moves forwards, and then away from the officers. So why is that same ICE officer firing when it seems like the car is eventually moving away from the officers?
No, he's firing the minute she's going towards him. That's the video I'm seeing. I've seen two different videos, two different angles. I'm sure more will come out.
Yeah.
And maybe both of our opinions could change slightly.
Sure.
You know, and let me make no mistake about it. Let me explain to your audience that federal agents are the keepers of the Constitution. When I was in the Secret Service, it was very important to us to make sure that people have their constitutional rights. If we aren't giving it to them, then who will? So we are the top authority of law enforcement. We are the federal policing agencies that preserve the rights of the people. And yes, even as Secret Service, my job was to protect the president, but we serve the people of the United States. We serve the Constitution, not necessarily the president like he's a dictator or something.
We're in a situation where you have the mayor, Jacob Frey, and clearly the governor, to a lesser extent, but I mean, the mayor saying, get the you-know-what out of our city to ICE agents. I mean, surely this is unsustainable when you've senior politicians in various states calling for an enforcement agency to leave their area.
What can you say? I mean, this is what's creating this in the first place. When you have an elected official literally going against your own country's law enforcement because it doesn't suit your needs, I would brand that as maybe a sick phenomenon, and a sick phenomenon that has spread through this country that, like, I've seen no other. You would have to be literally crazy, and I'm not saying that mayor is, but look, at the end of the day, you're an American. You have your American military, your American law enforcement. I'm proud to see my law enforcement, my firefighters, and if they want to send the military to patrol my street, they're welcome here. Okay, I don't know why any American would have a problem with their own police sending back illegal aliens that are not here legally and potentially causing crimes. These federal agents are just conducting law enforcement operations, and some people are against that. It does not give you the right to impede their operations, which is a crime in itself. And Governor Waltz even said that. Yes, protest peacefully. Even I agree with that. I believe you would, too. Mm. Protest peacefully. The power of protest, we can learn from Martin Luther King. The power of protests or Gandhi can shift worlds, change countries, but not this. And unfortunately, this individual decided to put her car in the middle of a law enforcement operation, try to block in federal agents. And, you know, when they get blocked in, that could be considered a threat. Okay. And they can potentially shoot their way out of that.
Well, as you say, I'm sure we'll find out more in the coming days, and we'll see further evidence. But I'm grateful for your time. Thank you. Barry Donandio is former U.S. Secret Service based in Washington, D.C., and previously worked at the White House. I can tell you, by the way, I know my colleague Ian Dale was talking about this earlier on. The Prime Minister has had a call with President Trump this evening. We've had the latest from Downing Street. And it's a short readout, but this is what they say. The Prime Minister spoke with President Trump this evening. They discussed the joint operation to intercept the Bella One, the topic with which we're talking about this hour, as part of shared efforts to crack down on sanctions busting, recent progress on Ukraine and the US operation in Venezuela. The Prime Minister also set out his position on Greenland. Oh, to be a fly on the wall for that conversation. It's 10:46.
LBC. Everything dinner at Ocado. Save on sausages, tinned tomatoes, and get a great price on garlic. Then splurge on the fancy pasta. The kind you know you're pronouncing wrong, which means it must be good. Save and splurge at Ocado, the online supermarket. Select lines only, geographical restrictions, minimum spend and charges apply. Offers end 27th of Jan. Terms and offer info at ocado.com/terms.
A Thames Link train is a place where you can just switch off. Where you have the chance to scroll your feeds as you roll past fields. Or simply relax with a podcast, playlist, or power nap. Go with your flow and save with advanced tickets at thameslinkrailway.com. Terms apply.
With over 50 years' experience at Fidelity, we believe there's a difference between investing and being invested. Investing is having access to guidance, tools, and expert insights. Being invested means feeling confident about your future. Investing is choosing from a wealth of investment options. Being invested means focusing on your long-term goals. For ISAs, pensions or advice, be truly invested with Fidelity. Go to fidelity.co.uk. Your capital is at risk. Terms apply.
Whatever you're cooking up this year, Lidl has your back. From supporting your protein goal to your plant-powered lifestyle, enjoy up to 20% off our chilled high-protein and Vermondo plant-based ranges with Lidl Plus. So you can fuel your day your way. Lidl, more to value. 18 plus GB only while stocks last. Terms apply. See lidl.co.uk/LPTV. Offer ends 14th of 1st, 2026.
I didn't want to miss Run Club, so they helped me back on my feet.
Couldn't face the crowds. Now, I'm doing more of what I love.
When I found a lump, I thought the worst. But before I knew it, I got my results.
Fast physio.
Mental health support.
Quick cancer care.
That's why I'm with Bupa.
Search Bupa Health Insurance to find out more. Pre-existing conditions not covered. Terms and conditions apply.
Henry Reilly on LBC. Text 84850.
Is in Surbiton. Good evening, Phil.
Good evening, Henry. How are you doing?
Yes, very well, thank you, sir. What would you like to tell me?
I'm just phoning up in relation to Henry.
Henry?
Sorry,
that's me.
David.
Oh, right.
Sorry, you're
well, you can call up in relation to me. That's fine. You're calling... this is about our previous caller.
With what you've been saying is fine. With what David's been saying, he needs to give his head a wobble. It's like he's picking one side or the other, and he's picking Russia and Venezuela. But, you know, if I'm honest with you, I think... when you look at both sides, or all three, if you're including the States, Venezuela, and Putin, they all need to sit back and look at what they're doing, or in fact, they know what they're doing. With the United States administration at the moment, I wouldn't trust them. With the Venezuelan government, how it has been, people have disappeared. You cannot speak out in opposition.
Yeah.
And in the States, it's kind of going the same way. You know, with the boats that they've blasted out of the water, it's like Trump has become judge, jury, and executioner. What happened to trying to arrest people and put them in front of a jury to see if they are guilty or not?
Well, I suppose Nicolas Maduro is technically in front of a judge, isn't he? But I don't think he's going to be able to get off necessarily. What do you make of this situation where we have the UK helping the US seize a Russian-backed tanker?
I think they have to, because if it's in breach of sanctions, we have to stand together. With the seizing of a tanker, it's not that if it's been sunk or if anyone's been shot and killed, it's been seized. And I would assume that in time that they will investigate to see whether it has breached sanctions. If it has, then it will be seized. If it's not, it will be allowed to go on its way. But comparing to what Trump's been doing, comparing to what's been happening in Venezuela, and compared to what Putin's doing, there's no comparison. Putin's invaded a sovereign country.
Well, quite, but where do you think that leaves Trump and Putin? Because there's this rightful criticism, justified criticism, that the president is too close with the Russian president. Could this show a break in that relationship? Hastings call it friendship, but in that relationship?
God only knows.
I
would hope it would break the relationship, but with what's been happening and what's happened so far, there's just so many questions as to why is Trump behaving like this? Why is Trump, as it seems, in Putin's pocket? And you think, with what has been happening, God only knows what's going to happen next. I think it depends what's happening in Trump's brain. As I said earlier, I've looked out the window. I don't think it's a full moon, but God knows what he will do next.
Well, I don't think it's anyone's guess, isn't it? Thank you very much. Appreciated, Phil. Always nice to hear from you. Just quickly, let me take you through the front pages. The Times: UK joins in the pursuit of Putin's shadow fleet. British spy planes and a Royal Navy support ship held US forces, to seize blockade-breaking oil tanker. The Daily Telegraph goes with that story, but leads with Badenoch blueprints to save our pubs. Tories vow to cut bills and scrap taxes as MPs celebrate. As MPs and celebrities celebrate backing the Telegraph's campaign. Kemi Badenoch has pledged to abolish business rates for thousands of pubs as she backed their campaign. I mean, to be honest, Tom Swarbrick's been campaigning on this since God was a boy as well. He's very into his pubs, that one. The Daily Mail: you need to be on fat jabs for life. Oxford study shows patients coming off the drugs pile pounds back on within 2 years. Well, who'd have thought that? That you put it all back on after you stop. Good luck if you're on it, by the way, and to the people I know who are on it. Millions of Brits taking weight loss jabs may need to stay on them for life, experts warn. Plus, shockers Claudia reveals secret traitor. I haven't been watching. I love the traitor. I haven't been watching this time, but I might have to go back and watch it. The Sun: look who's Hugh. Martin Clunes is going to be playing Hugh Edwards in a new TV drama. Telly favourite Martin Clunes will play Hugh Edwards in a two-part drama to go out on Channel 5. Seems a bit soon, doesn't it? The Daily Mirror, Jesse tests now. This is Jesse Nelson. The Mirror is calling for all newborns to be tested for the devastating condition that Jesse Nelson's two girls have. The Guardian, US seizes Russian flags tanker in high-stakes Atlantic operation. The Financial Times, I'm not sure why I did that. Financial Times, US seizes tanker and aims to control Venezuelan crude sales indefinitely. And last couple, the iPaper, UK ready to seize more of Putin's shadow ships as Great War grows. Well, it was our guest at the top, he said there's potentially as many as 1,200 in these shadow fleets that are still operating. And the lastly, the Metro, splash and grab, Trump seizes tankers in new show of force, what we're talking about this hour. Peter is in fact, Peter, coming to you in a second. Raj is also on the line, a new caller in Canberra in Australia. Hello, Raj.
Good evening, Henry. I think one of my opinion was mainly got to do with it's the hypocrisy and the narrative that doesn't suit the general audience. The Trump administration started with the narrative that it was all about drugs, but that wouldn't stick, would it? Because they had just pardoned Juan Hernandez. So that's not a fair enough narrative to pass on to the people. But I think it was always about oil. The United States is the highest exports of the United States is oil. That's like Qatar trying to claim that their highest export is agriculture when they don't even have enough reserves. The U.S. doesn't even fall into the top 10 oil reserves.
Well, clearly it was, to a large extent, about oil. I mean, no one's disputing that.
But unabashedly, right? Now, yeah. It's just that they have changed their stance. So, but the argument that the Venezuelan regime was a bad one, there are plenty of regimes which are bad ones, but that's not the modern way of solving problems in other countries.
Of course. But
that's the only excuse we want to use.
Of course you need to abide and look at international law. I understand that. But really, I mean, it seems to be, as any sort of David in Crystal Palace who called earlier on, I mean, no one is mourning the Maduro regime.
Yes, but is that anyone's place as of now? That's supposed to be...
Maduro is.
Not really. He's not a part of a monarchy or not a part of a communist society right now.
No, he's a man who claimed to the office of president when he didn't win a legitimate election.
Wasn't that the same thing said about Trump as well?
I mean, sure, you can talk about Trump saying the election was stolen, fine, but I mean, he ultimately didn't become president, did he? He can moan about it being stolen, whereas Maduro did end up staying on as president in two elections, one last year that he didn't, or I suppose 2 years ago now, they didn't win.
Well, the outcome was different, but the attempt was the same, wasn't it? Trump had forced many of the people within his cabinet.
Sure, but ultimately, one was president and one wasn't.
Yes, but that's the outcome. They both had the same intention. They both wanted to win the election. It just happens that Maduro happened to win the election this time, and Trump didn't. But that doesn't change. The intention was any different.
Okay, I understand where you're going with it. I think comparing the two, I get why you've done it. I'm not entirely sure it's the best comparison. But Raj, it's nice to hear from you. Thank you, a new caller in Canberra. Peter's in West Hampstead, slightly closer to home. Hi, Peter.
Yes, hello. Hello, Henry.
Hello.
Have you noticed how high off the water this tanker is?
Yes. Does that suggest it's not carrying a lot of oil?
Well, I'm wondering if it's carrying something else. I'm wondering, its trajectory is all a bit peculiar, and I'm wondering, in fact, if it's not carrying oil at all, it's carrying something else.
I'm not a military expert, but I did see, I was, basically, the bottom half of the ship that is extremely rusty, if it was full with oil, you'd normally expect that to be below the surface, wouldn't you?
Yes, you would. So it's carrying, it might be carrying something that's much less dense than oil, like missiles.
Oh, goodness. Well, I mean, we don't know that, but...
Well, we have no idea, no. But, I mean, it is such a rust bucket that you just can't allow... you can't tell by appearances, but I strongly suspect it's in terrible condition. And ships like that really should be subject to inspection and subject to insurance.
Well, particularly when they're right by our waters as well.
Well, it would be an environmental disaster if that thing sunk with a whole load of oil on board.
Yeah.
But it is, so you can't really see the plinthole line. You know the sort of engravings they give?
Yes.
But it looks to me so top-heavy that there's something very odd about it.
I would agree with that. I would definitely agree. What do you make of the UK backing the US in seizing this? It seems to me a sensible move, Peter.
Yeah, I think it is. I mean, the ships like that should be taken off, should be regularised, should be insured, should be properly logged, and also flight planned. You know, you have collisions. Heaven knows what could happen. We've got this storm coming up. If it goes in another direction,
that's true. Yeah.
You can't have the seas unregulated any more than the air unregulated.
Thank you, Peter, in West Hampstead. Pretty sound view, I would agree. Whether it's just half empty or what it's carrying, I don't quite know. But thank you very much for your call. On that, we are going to stay with a related story coming up.
Enforcing peace means being prepared to overmatch the Russians, and that means also being prepared to fight them if necessary.
So we could have British troops firing on Russian military personnel in Ukraine?
We could.
The former Deputy Supreme Commander of NATO tells LBC's Nick Ferrari British troops could fire on the Russian troops in Ukraine if troops are deployed. We'll discuss that next. And
ordinary everyday women who are being sexualised. Grok is putting up those images of them in bikinis.
MPs are now urging a boycott of Elon Musk's app Grok. And later,
get your motor running. Head out on the highway.
Learner drivers could face a 6-month wait between their theory and their practical tests. But really, shouldn't there be a graduated driving licence instead?
On your radio, on the LBC app, and
Play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation. This is LBC.
From Global's newsroom at 11 o'clock, the Defence Secretary said the oil tanker intercepted by the US in the North Atlantic was falsely flagged and is a sanctioned stateless vessel. Giving a statement to the Commons, John Healey explained that no UK personnel took part in the boarding of the ship, but that UK forces supported the operation at the request of the US.
The UK will not stand by as malign activity increases on the high seas, and alongside our allies, we are stepping up our response against shadow vessels, and we will continue to do so.
Well, Daniel L. Davis, former Lieutenant Colonel in the United States Army, told LBC this evening that the concern now will be Russia's reaction.
We've set this precedence now that if we declare something unfriendly, we can take it on the open seas. And so how are we going to say that Russia can't do the same if they declare it so? And so that's what remains to be seen, is what the Russian reaction is going to be. So far, it's been pretty muted, but I imagine they're going to do something because they're very famous for a tit-for-tat kind of operation, and I would not be at all surprised to see that some Western ship is seized on the seas by the Russian ships later on.
The U.S. Secretary of State says he'll meet with Danish officials next week following Donald Trump's renewed threats to annex Greenland. The president's repeatedly said he could take it over for national security reasons. Two men who left an open prison in Gloucestershire and didn't come back when they were supposed to have been arrested. It's thought they absconded from HMP Layhill on New Year's Day. A federal agent has shot and killed a motorist in Minneapolis during an immigration crackdown in the city. Authorities claim the woman was targeted when she tried to run over Immigration and Customs Enforcement officers. Barry Donanio is a former member of the U.S. Secret Service and told LBC he thinks it was a legal shoot.
It is not okay in any city, any place, anywhere in the whole world to sit and when a police officer is challenging you, has a gun, telling you to stop and has lawful authority, you cannot ram him and potentially kill him.
Former England manager Kevin Keegan has been diagnosed with cancer. The 74-year-old's family say they're grateful for the ongoing care of medics. LBC weather, patchy cloud and snow showers in Scotland tomorrow, becoming wet and windy for Wales and the southwest through the day. Rain will turn to snow for central England and Wales by the evening, a high of 9 degrees. From Global's newsroom, for LBC, I'm Daryl Jackson.
This is LBC from Global, leading Britain's conversation with Henry Reilly.
Good evening to you. It was coming up to 3 minutes past 11. You're listening to Henry Reilly in for Ben Kentish on LBC. Lovely to have your company. Thank you. We're going to be talking after midnight about driving again, but this time young people driving and whether this idea of I actually think it's very sensible, this 6 month gap you have to have between your provisional and your theory, thank you, we'll get there eventually, it's about 20 days in a row, to be fair, the theory and the practical test, but also an interesting campaign about this idea of a graduated driving licence, whether you think that would be more sensible. I understand why you'd want a graduated driving licence, but ultimately, if you're fit to drive, you're fit to drive. The idea that you would drive and you would start off not at night and you would start off not having people in your car, I do understand it. I'm not opposed to it, but my instant reaction would be that you're either fit to drive or you're not, and a sort of graduated process might not be sensible. But I'm willing to be persuaded on this. We're going to talk about that after midnight, so feel free to book your calls in now. We're going to talk about a related story this hour. I was going to say idea, it's actually been virtually confirmed by our Prime Minister that the UK would send troops to Ukraine. Sir Keir Starmer has pledged that MPs would get a vote on the deployment of British soldiers to police any agreement to end the conflict in Ukraine. The Prime Minister said the move would be consistent with recent practice on approving military action in Parliament. Although, curiously, you'd get a vote if you're an MP, but the vote won't be binding. So if MPs vote against having troops in Ukraine, then the Prime Minister will say, well, thank you, I've heard what you have to say, and I'm now going to do the complete opposite. Well, he could say that. I mean, it seems to me that is strange, that it wouldn't be binding. We talk about how sovereign Parliament is. I do wonder, I know often these votes are advisory, and you look at sort of votes on Syria and airstrikes and Libya and whatnot, and there is a sort of long history of this. Although, when it comes to British troops being sent to Ukraine, I do think there's a conversation to be had, particularly when you have eminent people arguing that you could end up with British troops firing at Russian troops on the territory of Ukraine. I mean, it would seem to me that Parliament should absolutely have a say and have the decision, really. But keen to know your thoughts nonetheless. If you were an MP, how would you vote? Would you vote to send British troops to Ukraine, or would you vote against it? It's really that simple. And what of the idea that Britain actually, it's only Britain and France that it seems so far who've committed to having troops in Ukraine. I always think of Korea when we talk about boots on the ground. During the Korean War, it was something like 300,000 US troops that were fighting, and sort of maintaining, the peace in Korea. Now, however many years on, 70 years on, there or thereabouts, there are still 20 to 30,000 US troops, mostly on the border, but nonetheless in Korea. So this idea that it's going to be, yeah, we go there for a year, Putin backs off, he then leaves, and it's all sort of, you know, happy clappy. I really don't think that's the case. So this is a long-term commitment. I'm not saying I oppose it, by the way. I think I'm largely, well, no, I am in favour of it, if it helps get to a point whereby we can maintain Ukraine's sovereignty and thus defend Europe. But make no mistake, this is not going to be quick. It's not going to be we're there for a short matter of time. This is going to be for the long term. We read as well that the UK would send fewer than 7,500 troops to Ukraine. That's because Britain and France would have 15,000 in total, because army chiefs warning, you guessed it, personnel numbers were too low in order to send more. Would you be happy sending British troops to Ukraine? 0345 606 0973 is the number to call. And let's be clear, this would only happen in the event of a peace deal that Russia has to agree to. So it's a long way off. They're not going to be sent tomorrow. And then having said that as well, if you go off what Vladimir Putin has said, he's also made it pretty clear that he wouldn't accept any British troops or French troops, allied troops, on the ground in Ukraine. So that would seem to be an impediment to the very peace deal that this would come about as a result of. So it's all very confusing. But if we go on the sort of brass tacks of it, the UK sending troops to Ukraine along with France, is it something you'd be comfortable voting for if you were an MP? 0345 6060 973. Something raised in the House of Commons today. You'll hear from Sir Keir Starmer and Kemi Badenoch.
Were troops to be deployed under the declaration signed, I would put that matter to the House for a vote.
It is frankly astonishing that the Prime Minister is not making a full statement to Parliament today.
And a significant intervention on LBC this morning. The former Deputy Supreme Commander of NATO, General Sir Richard Sheriff, spoke with my colleague Nick Ferrari and made the point that you could have a situation where Brits' troops are firing on Russian troops.
The bottom line is also that if this can't be a lightly armed blueberry type UN style. It's got to be prepared to enforce peace. And enforcing peace means being prepared to overmatch the Russians. And that means also being prepared to fight them if necessary.
So we could have British troops firing on Russian military personnel in Ukraine?
We could.
That's got to make you nervous, sir.
Yeah, it is. But it's realistic that there's not going to be a lasting peace until Russia is forced into it and forced to accept Ukraine as a sovereign state and Zelensky as president. And thus far, we've seen no indication at all that Russia is prepared to acquiesce with the discussions that we saw in Paris yesterday.
General Sir Richard Sheriff speaking with LBC earlier on, also speaking with LBC News, our sister station, was the former Defence Secretary Lord Hutton, formerly a Labour Defence Secretary, who made the point that there has to be an awful lot of work done to make sure that British troops sent in are protected.
We want to see Ukraine exist as a sovereign, free, independent nation. That's its right under the UN Charter. And we are, I think, doing the right thing in signalling our willingness to support Ukraine in that endeavour. But I think we should be under no illusion just how dangerous such a peacekeeping mission could be. And we've got to make sure our troops have all the material support they need to do that job properly. But yes, it is a serious situation we could find ourselves in. But I think we've got to ask ourselves the question, do we want to continue with the fighting? Do we want to continue with this? Or do we want to bring an end to it and make sure that the Russians don't pose any further threat to the eastern border of NATO.
So Nick Harvey is a former armed forces minister and a former Lib Dem MP, joins me now. Your thoughts on British troops operating in Ukraine?
I think if there is a peace deal in Ukraine, this kind of has to happen afterwards, because even if there's a new border, I think for Ukraine to have any confidence that the Russians are not going to invade again and come back for more, they're going to want friendly troops alongside their own, helping them build up their defences. And I think the idea that this could be done by neutral forces from some other part of the world is really not realistic, and it would have to be European allies who provided those forces. So I personally don't see any sign of a peace deal anytime soon, but if eventually one does come, something of this sort has to happen afterwards. Britain has shown strong leadership throughout the Ukraine conflict, and logically we would be part of that.
And how would you see it looking? Is there any other conflict that you could compare it to? We know that obviously there are still troops within Korea, tens of thousands of US troops.
And that's a very good question, and it's difficult to think of a direct parallel. I mean, we've put troops into places like Kosovo before now, but of course Kosovo is tiny compared with Ukraine, which is absolutely vast, and would have a very long border with Russia, which it's going to take a sizable force to protect. I mean, the bulk of that can and would be provided by Ukraine itself, whose military capabilities and capacity has increased many times over in the last 4 years, but they will need the strong defence of allies, and the rest of Europe is going to be the principal place they can expect to draw that from.
How should people respond to the fact it's only Britain and France at the moment who are willing to send troops?
Yes, I mean, it won't be viable if it's only Britain and France. Frankly, the entire French and entire British army would struggle to undertake this on their own. It's going to need to be a much bigger force than that. I mean, I think at the moment we're largely talking hypotheticals. There were 39 countries at the Paris meeting a day or two ago. More of them, I think, in time would lean into this and be willing to provide troops. I think the French and the British are showing a bit of a lead and getting some flesh in the game early. Of course, it also remains to be seen what the United States are going to do, because it's difficult to see how this could possibly work without their active involvement. Whether that's in the form of troops on the ground would remain to be seen, but it's almost impossible for the foreseeable future to defend Ukraine's vast landmass without some support from America.
And if there was a vote in Parliament, are you confident that that would pass?
I would have thought so, because there's been pretty much political consensus from the outset of the Ukraine conflict. I'm not aware of any sizable contingent in Parliament that would be opposed, so I would expect to see this passed overwhelmingly, yes.
I was listening earlier on to Sir Richard Sheriff, who was the former Deputy Allied Yes. Supreme Commander of NATO. He was telling my colleague Nick Ferrari that you could end up in a situation where British troops are having to fire on Russian troops in Ukraine.
Well, that's not impossible. I hope it won't come to that. But, you know, let's not get into a funk about this. The population of Europe is far bigger than that of Russia. The economy of Europe is far bigger than that of Russia. The number of uniformed armed service people is far greater in Europe than in Russia. And actually, the amount of kit we've got in Europe is far greater than Russia. It would take a bit of pulling together because it's not necessarily as coherent as it might be with 30-plus independent sovereign states having planned and designed it all, but we shouldn't regard this as something absolutely overwhelming. I don't think it'll come to that. I hope it doesn't. I understand why the Russians, who are, I believe, talking about some sort of a buffer zone, perhaps in the Donbass region, might not want to see European troops in that buffer zone. And I think that would ideally be something that would be undertaken by more neutral forces. But in whatever is the residue of Ukraine itself, there's just no way they can build a coherent defence without European support. And we must be willing to step up and play a part in that, because defending Ukraine is defending Europe, is defending Britain.
Are you confident that there will be some agreements that the United States, that Ukraine can get behind?
I would hesitate to say anything about the United States foreign policy with a very great deal of confidence. And if I was President Zelensky or indeed anyone else in Ukraine, I would be quite sceptical about American guarantees of their security, not least because America, like Britain, gave such guarantees back when Ukraine came out of the Soviet Union and relinquished its nuclear weapons. We all said we would guarantee their security, and we've not really done a very good job of it. But far more to the point, if Zelensky and the Ukrainians can see Trump threatening to invade a fellow NATO member, I'm talking here obviously about Greenland and its being part of Denmark,
yeah,
then how much confidence can anyone have in the sort of guarantees they might give? So I'm not saying that they won't. I don't think we should push America away. We should keep trying to engage with them and draw them in. But you're asking me, am I confident? And the honest truth is, it's very hard to have much confidence in any of it at the moment.
And you talk of Greenland. The other big story is this tanker that has been seized.
Yes.
UK armed forces helped the US to seize a tanker. I just sort of wonder, that seemed to be a Russian-bound tanker. Your thoughts on the UK's involvement?
Well, I think we're right to be involved if America has asked us to support what they're doing. I mean, this shipping trade is a rogue business. The vessel, we're told by John Healey, the Defence Secretary, in his common statement, was flying a false flag. It's clear that this is sanctions busting, that there are shipments of dark and dodgy oil reserves going around the world between nations whom we are opposed to. So I think for the sake of Ukraine, for the sake of Western security, for the sake of the opponents of the regime in Iran, it is actually right to get involved in disrupting this murky business. And geography has meant that we've been able to contribute something to this operation. I don't personally have too many misgivings about it.
OK, so Nick Harvey, former Armed Forces Minister and a former Liberal Democrat MP. Over to you now. If you were one of those MPs that Keir Starmer says is going to get a vote, and let's pretend it actually matters, unlike the one that actually is going to take place, i.e. that it would be binding, how would you vote? in order to send British troops in Ukraine. Are you wholly comfortable with the idea? 0345 6060 973 is the number to call.
Weekdays from 7 a.m.
They have fatal incompetence.
Straight to the point.
What is the problem they've got over there?
Nick Ferrari at breakfast on LBC.
The country's going backwards. Growth down. Energy prices up.
Listen on our free Global Player app or the new LBC app. Download it now from your app store. LBC. Henry Reilly on LBC. Call 0345 6060 973.
11:18 is the time. Let's go to your views. Richard says, I served 10 years in the British Army in two wars for my country with some really good men. Two of them have ended their lives prematurely recently. And of course, if that is you, I would need to always point out that you can get help from the Samaritans, 116123. And says, if you know what I mean, this country can't look after its veterans. It's got it to the point where now putting boots on the ground would be a big no from me, someone who served there. Yvonne in Hastings says, never mind the MPs having a vote on troops. Reference Ukraine, let the mothers decide. The mothers whose children will be in the firing lines, says Yvonne. Jack is in Southend-on-Sea. Hello, Jack.
Hello.
Hello, sir.
Hello. Yeah, what are we talking about? The British interception of the...
Well, we were, but we were now talking about boots on the ground in Ukraine. But I'm happy to take your view on either.
Right, boots on the ground in Ukraine. With the British Army, we don't have the resources.
Well, the Prime Minister says we do.
We don't have the troops. Yeah, of course he does, yeah. He's got to say something to quell all the voices that oppose that view. We don't have enough troops to send over to Ukraine. The British Army is depleted. It's suffered, as is the Navy and the Air Force, over many years. It's gone from thousands to hundreds.
Yeah.
So what?
Well, what do you mean hundreds?
Okay. Well, what's the total number of personnel in the British Army?
It's about 70. It's about 70,000 to 75,000,
yeah,
roughly. But it's,
okay,
it's obviously so gone down a lot on what it was.
Yeah, it has. That's the point I'm trying to make.
If we get buy-in from the French, for example, and from other members of this so-called coalition of the willing, then would you be happy to see us, if we do have that guarantees from the US and have the guarantees also from other European countries?
We have guarantees from everybody and we're all prepared to work together. Yes, I'm absolutely in favour of it.
Mm.
But can we trust America the way things are going over there at the moment? Don't know.
Would you be, I don't know if you have any children, Jack, but maybe a niece or a nephew, would you be happy for them to be sent? I think that's what it comes down to ultimately as well.
Yes, I would be happy for them to be sent to do their duty for their country.
Mm.
As my father and grandfather did their duty in the Second and First World War for their country. Yes, absolutely.
Yeah. Okay. Thank you very much, Jack. Appreciated. Jack there in Southend-on-Sea. We mentioned earlier on there was this press conference going on, or there was this shooting with regards the ICE immigration in the United States. A woman has been confirmed dead. Let's just cross live and listen to a press conference that's going on currently in Minneapolis.
Who was blocking the officers in with her vehicle, and she had been stalking and impeding their work all throughout the day. ICE agents repeatedly ordered her to get out of the car and to stop obstructing law enforcement, but she refused to obey their commands. She then proceeded to weaponize her vehicle, and she attempted to run an law enforcement officer over. This appears as an attempt to kill or to cause bodily harm to agents, an act of domestic terrorism. The ICE officer, fearing for his life and the other officers around him and the safety of the public, fired defensive shots. He used his training to save his own life and that of his colleagues. He was treated at a local hospital, has been released, and is now with family. I encourage the American people at this point in time to pray for him, but also to pray for the deceased's family and her loved ones. Today alone, in this country, there have been four different domestic terrorist attacks on federal officers by the ramming of vehicles. Three of them happened here in Minneapolis. We've seen over 100 of these vehicle rammings happen in just recent weeks, and this must stop. ICE alone is facing a 1,300% increase in assaults against them and an 8,000% increase in death threats against all of them. In fact, the very same officer who was attacked today had previously been dragged by an anti-ICE rioter who had rammed him with a car and drug him back in June. He sustained injuries at that time as well. And let me remind you why we're all here in this city today and why we've been here. In communities across this country and here in Minneapolis, we're just enforcing the laws that we have in this country. For years under President Biden, tens of millions of dangerous criminal illegal aliens, terrorists, and suspected terrorists were allowed to invade our country over our southern border. They were allowed to steal, to defraud, and to perpetuate violence against American citizens. Regardless of who your mayor or who your governor is, President Trump promised every single American that he would make America safe again. He promised every single American that he would work to protect them from dangerous criminals. Since Governor Walz has been in charge of Minnesota, we have seen homicides go up by over 50%. That's also during Mayor Fry's tenure as well. Since President Trump took office, Governor Walz has released over 470 violent criminals back onto the streets here in Minneapolis. He has another 680 of them still within his jurisdiction that he could give to us today to face the consequences for their crimes. Because Governor Walz and Mayor Fry refuse to protect Minnesotans, and instead they protect these criminals, that's why we are here. And we didn't just show up yesterday. We've always been here. But we're surging.
You're listening to LBC. This is Kristi Noem, by the way, the U.S. Secretary of Homeland Security. This after U.S. immigration fatally shot a woman in Minneapolis. This is a live press conference taking place in Minnesota. Let's go back.
And to steal American taxpayers' dollars. This state has faced unprecedented immigration fraud. It's seen unprecedented benefit fraud. Individuals were allowed to come into this country and set up fake companies and fake nonprofits and divert billions of dollars away from American citizens and those vulnerable citizens who truly needed the services from those programs. This city has burned before, and your mayor and your governor let it happen. President Trump is not going to let that happen. He and our federal law enforcement officers are here to bring peace and to bring public safety, and to ensure that criminal activity is stopped and that people who perpetuate it will face consequences. Since we have been here in recent weeks, we have arrested over 1,500 criminals off of the streets. Our law enforcement has arrested murderers, known and suspected terrorists, child pedophiles, and other brutal criminals that were protected here in this city. We should all work together to protect our citizens. We should all protect the men and the women and the families who live here in Minneapolis, who live in Minnesota, and live throughout this entire country. I want to thank you for being here, and I want to thank you for focusing on the important work that our federal officers do and make sure that we're focused on the priorities of this country, and that's making sure that we're keeping people safe. With that, I'll take any questions that you may have.
You're listening to LBC. We're going to stay with this just for a moment. This is Kristi Noem, the U.S. Secretary of Homeland Security, on this U.S. immigration officer shooting a woman who is now dead. So let's just take a listen in to some of the journalist questions.
Been taught to do in that situation and took actions to defend himself and defend his fellow law enforcement officers.
Secretary, can you expand, too, on the agent's injuries? The president said that he's talking to
you. The officer was hit by the vehicle. She hit him. He went to the hospital. A doctor did treat him. He has been released. He's going to spend some time with his family. I can't, but the FBI will continue the investigation and release more facts when it's appropriate. No, we're following the standard protocol procedures we do in situations like this. When there's an officer-involved shooting, we make sure that we get the facts and that we are getting the statements from everybody involved and make sure that investigators are handling the decisions.
Secretary, have ICE operations paused because of what happened today?
No, we're still out on the streets doing our work to get dangerous criminals off of the streets of Minneapolis.
Can you tell me insight into your conversation?
You know, Tim and I have known each other for years. We served in Congress together. We both ran for governor the same year and have served as governor at the same times. So we were colleagues, and we discussed what happened here today. We have two very different viewpoints of it. I talked specifically about the fact that we have laws. They need to be enforced. He knows that I believe sanctuary policies have protected criminals and placed a priority of them over the citizens that live here. And he knows we'll continue to do our work. And I encouraged him to work with us. We've never had a cooperative arrangement with law enforcement here. Whenever we've done investigations, whenever we've done police work, when we've been doing what we can to bring people to justice for the crimes that they commit, we haven't had the cooperation of the state of Minnesota or the city police here under the mayor's direction. If you talk to any of these federal law enforcement officers, they'll say that when they call for backup in a situation, that it's hit and miss. They were grateful today that the police chief and local law enforcement showed up at the scene and helped secure it to make sure that nobody was harmed and that the FBI could do their work. But I would encourage them to work with us, that we could form a partnership that would make sure that individuals have the opportunity to have a safe Minneapolis. Over here. You know, it's clearly established law that a vehicle driven by a person and used to harm someone is a deadly weapon. Deadly force is perfectly lawful when a threat is faced by a weapon. So I do believe that this officer used his training in this situation, and we'll let the FBI continue the investigation to get it resolved. I know you keep asking that, but that doesn't mean that the FBI is going to give you an answer today. There will be an investigation. We want to make sure that it's factual. What I would ask is that as we go forward from here today, that we all remember that our job is to have peaceful discussions. I encourage our local law enforcement and state law enforcement to work with us. We are going to continue to operate here in Minneapolis and in the state of Minnesota to make sure we're going after dangerous criminals. One of the key focuses that we've had here is a focus on individuals who are sexual predators and are involved in child exploitation. When I was just here yesterday, we arrested individuals who were charged with criminal assault and sexual assault and people that exploited children. Why would you want to keep them on your streets? President Trump has promised to go after the worst of the worst, and that's exactly what we're doing in Minneapolis. By not working with us, Governor Walz and Mayor Fry are putting those criminals and prioritizing them over our children and our grandchildren. And that's simply not true. He said that to me on the phone, too. So I'll get him the documentation that he needs so that he knows that we would love to coordinate with him. He doesn't give us access to any information on criminals, let us know who he's detained, doesn't honor our detainers, and has individuals and criminals in his jurisdiction that he won't turn over us today, too. Yes. I won't speak to that case right now, but we can get you the details and the information on that. But the facts of the matter is he's an experienced officer. He's been in situations like this before, and he certainly has been out there and followed his training today. You know, people need to stop using their vehicles as weapons. This domestic act of terrorism to use your vehicle to try to kill law enforcement officers is going to stop. And I'm asking the Department of Justice to prosecute it as domestic terrorism because it's clear that it's being coordinated. People are being trained and told how to use their vehicles to impede law enforcement operations and then to run over anybody who gets in their way while they go out there and try to disrupt peace and public safety. And Americans deserve better. That hasn't been a part of the discussion. I know Governor Walz mentioned some of that earlier in his press conference, but we know we've got law enforcement officers here that will continue to work, and we're hopeful that the public recognizes that the work that we do every day makes America safe again. With that, we had law enforcement officers that were out there doing an enforcement action, and a vehicle got stuck in the snow, and so they had called for other people to come and help them get that vehicle out. Those officers were trying to free the vehicle when the harassment started, when the protesters were out there impeding their vehicles and preventing them from leaving the scene. I won't speak to that. Were they on a
crime that person may be committed that you're going after.
Mm-mm.
Well, body count for the
fear. Mm-hmm. I will let the FBI decide.
Were they on target today when they were in that neighborhood?
They were returning back to headquarters, I believe, to start a new operation, had just completed one. Well, thank you. What's that? I was one of the vehicles that ICE officers were using. But remember, when we operate in a task force model. So we have other federal agencies that work with us, and we're very grateful for that. We have CBP officers, the FBI, DEA, ATF, all of those all work with us every day in a task force model, and we appreciate it. We'd love to have the state police, and we'd also love to have the Minneapolis police chief and his team be alongside of us while we're out there doing those enforcement operations. With that, we'll get you more information as it is revealed, but thank you, and everybody, let's work together to make sure that we can continue to help the city be safer, get more criminals off the streets, and ensure that our public has the opportunity to pursue the American dream in a city they can be proud of. Thank you.
Okay, that press conference has just concluded, taking it live. That was from Minneapolis in Minnesota, and you were hearing from Kristi Noem, the U.S. Secretary of Homeland Security. A lot of claims there, and very political. Something you see with the United States. I mean, ultimately, a woman has died, has been shot by U.S. immigration officials, and it's become very political. You heard there. I know there are midterm elections coming up in just a few, well, I say just a few months, towards the end of the year, although the campaigning starts, but very much sort of getting into a slinging match with Governor Waltz, who you'll recall, by the way, is not just any Democrat Tim Waltz. He was the running mate of Kamala Harris in the most recent presidential election. So there is clearly politics going on there, but it doesn't stop from the news that we have the name of the person who was shot. Renee Nicole Good was the person, we are told by local media in Minneapolis, after a U.S. immigration officer fatally shot that woman in Minneapolis. That was a live press conference from Kristi Noem, the U.S. Secretary for Homeland Security. We'll be giving you more on that as we get it. And I mentioned earlier on as well, we played the Mayor of Minneapolis, Jacob Frey, and Governor Tim Walz. After the break, I'll tell you and remind you what they had to say as well. You're listening to LBC. My name is Henry Riley. The time is 11:35, and the news is with Daryl Jackson.
U.S. Homeland Security Secretary Kristi Noem has told reporters at a news conference that any loss of life is a tragedy after a federal agent shot and killed a motorist in Minneapolis during an immigration crackdown in the city. Authorities claim the woman was targeted when she tried to run over Immigration and Customs Enforcement officers. The FBI has started an investigation. The Defence Secretary has told MPs the UK owes it to Ukraine to take part in any action to stop Russia flouting sanctions. John Healey was explaining why British troops are involved in the U.S. operation to seize a Russian-flagged tanker this afternoon. And the US Secretary of State says he's planning to meet Danish officials next week to discuss Donald Trump's plans to take control of Greenland. Last night, the White House wouldn't rule out using military action to acquire it for security reasons. LBC weather, patchy cloud and snow showers in Scotland tomorrow, becoming wet and windy for Wales and the southwest through the day. Rain will then turn to snow for central England and Wales by the evening. Highs of 9 degrees.
This is LBC.
The people of Britain love their spin bikes. They also love moving their card balances to a Barclaycard Platinum Balance Transfer Card with no interest for 36 months and £20 cash back until the 29th of January 2026. A balance transfer fee of 3.45% applies, subject to financial status. T's and C's and exclusions apply. Check if you're eligible at barclaycard.co.uk. Representative example, 24.9% APR representative variable and 24.9% purchase rate per annum based on a £1,200 credit limit.
Hello, this is my mum's work phone. I've re-recorded her voicemail because I'm 8 and I've never had a holiday where she hasn't been distracted by work. This hotel has 2 pools and 3 water slides and she promised to take me shopping. So, before you leave her a message, maybe don't.
Take your holiday seriously. British Airways Holidays. Atoll protected.
Hi, I'm Claire, and last year I did my first big hike for Cancer Research UK. It was amazing. The scenery was stunning, the volunteers cheered us through it, and the free hot meal at the end was really what I needed. I did the full marathon hike. There's also a half marathon and a 10K if you don't fancy the big one.
Join thousands of hikers like Claire and escape to nature as you help to fund life-saving research. Search Big Hike today for 30% off your entry. Together, we are beating cancer. T's and C's apply.
This is LBC with Henry Reilly. Call 0345 6060 973. Text 84850. Alexa, send a comment to LBC.
11:38 is the time. Good evening. You're listening to Henry Reilly here on LBC. We're talking this hour primarily about Ukraine. The UK would send troops to Ukraine and MPs would get a vote. If you were one of those MPs, how would you cast your vote? Would you vote to send UK troops to Ukraine, or do you think we should stay out of it? 0345 6060 973 is the number to call. We've also been hearing from this extraordinary press conference that has just finished in Minneapolis, which is in Minnesota. Kristi Noem, the Homeland Security Secretary, was giving an update and said that the officer defensively shot to protect himself. She said that the car was being weaponized by the person who has died, and that's been named now. That individual is Renee Nicole Good. Kristi Noem also saying the agency will continue its immigration operations in Minneapolis. They've scaled it up recently. They've been operating there for a few weeks to get dangerous criminals off the streets. And this comes as Democrats have really called and gone after ICE, the security agency in the United States, saying that they should effectively get out of town and they should no longer stay there. ICE is immigration and customs enforcement, by the way, but is these officers that are operating at street level in a lot of cases and going after immigration. And in this case, there is now a woman who's been fatally shot. I mentioned earlier on there were Democrats as well. The mayor of Minneapolis is Jacob Frey, and he spoke earlier on.
To ICE, get the out of Minneapolis. We do not want you here. Your stated reason for being in this city is to create some kind of safety, and you are doing exactly the opposite. People are being hurt. Families are being ripped apart. Long-term Minneapolis residents that have contributed so greatly to our city, to our culture, to our economy are being terrorized, and now somebody is dead.
And what of the Minnesota governor, Tim Walz?
To Minnesotans, I say this. I feel your anger. I'm angry. They want a show. We can't give it to them. We cannot. If you protest and express your First Amendment rights, please do so peacefully as you always do. We can't give them what they want. The hearts and minds of the people in this state are on our side. To Americans, I ask you this. Please stand with Minneapolis.
Tim Walz as well. And of course, before that, you heard Mayor Jacob Frey. John is in Minnesota. Hi. Hello, John.
Yes.
Hello. What would you like to say?
Well, I think like many people, I'm absolutely shocked. Not necessarily that this is happening. What do you expect when you throw thousands of ICE people out on the streets? But shocked that this is being allowed to happen. And also shocked that that an officer would be so willing to use deadly force and to show apparently no remorse. We see in the videos him walking down the street just as if nothing happened, just like it was another day at the job.
Have you seen ICE agents operating in your states?
I have not. It appears that they're in the Twin Cities, Minneapolis, St. Paul, immediate area, and I'm a little ways out of that. So I have not seen them myself, but obviously it's all over the news.
Mm. How do you
and
feel?
Social media.
How do you feel about them operating within your states?
Well, you know, obviously, ICE has a role to play. Now, that being said, with that role comes great responsibility. Mm. And that's my issue. They're flooding the streets with no explanation why. It appears that they're just attempting to goad the community into overreacting. And one has to think, is that really the motive here? They're trying to create some type of riot in the streets.
Why would they want to do that?
Well, I think it's a distraction from the failures that we've seen economically. Our country's not in a great shape. We also have the government has been stonewalling on the Epstein file releases. There are a number of things. And I think that the Trump administration sees it as a strength.
Mm. What would you like to see done now, John, as someone who lives in Minnesota?
Well, I would like to see the governor and the attorney general do a sincere, credible, complete investigation. And if there is any way to bring this person or people to justice, I'd like to see that happen. I just heard this evening through social media news, or independent news, I should say, that there's also some allegations that a doctor was available and ICE did not allow that doctor to see this woman.
I have seen that. There's a video about someone saying, can they check their pulse? I have to say, look, as a responsible journalist, or try to be, a lot of this is only coming through X and through social media channels. So I'm not entirely sure. That wasn't addressed in the press conference, nor was it addressed by Jacob Frey, the Democrat mayor. So I'm not entirely sure about that. But I'm grateful for your view, John. Amazing to get someone who's in Minnesota. If you are in Minneapolis or Minnesota more broadly, I would like to hear from you this evening on this extraordinary news where you are, but of course having global reverberations that a US immigration officer has fatally shot a woman in Minneapolis, someone working for ICE, the intelligence agency, the Immigration and Customs Enforcement. In a moment, delighted to say, we'll be joined by Jeff Hayden, who's a former Democrat state senator for Minnesota. The time is 11:44.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast on LBC.
British Prime Minister Sir Keir Starmer signed a declaration of intent alongside French President Emmanuel Macron, committing Britain and France to providing troops on the ground in Ukraine to maintain peace. To General Sir Richard Sheriff, who's former Deputy Supreme Commander of NATO in Europe and wrote the book War with Russia. Sir Richard, what happens if I'm one of the brave military personnel who's part of this peacekeeping force and I or my colleagues are fired on by Russia?
This statement is pretty light on detail. It's got to be prepared to enforce peace. And enforcing peace means being prepared to overmatch the Russians.
So we could have British troops firing on Russian military personnel in Ukraine.
We could.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast. Back tomorrow morning from 7. Listen on our free Global Player app or the new LBC app.
With over 50 years' experience at Fidelity, we believe there's a difference between investing and being invested. Investing is having access to guidance, tools and expert insights. Being invested means feeling confident about your future. Investing is choosing from a wealth of investment options. Being invested means focusing on your long-term goals. For ISAs, pensions or advice, be truly invested with Fidelity. Go to fidelity.co.uk. Your capital is at risk. Terms apply.
Another early morning gym session skipped. Some New Year's resolutions set you up to fail. But a new Mazda CX-30 is the one you will want to keep. Available with 0% APR and a £750 deposit contribution during the Mazda January sale. Order by the 31st of January. Search Mazda. Available on PCP when financed by Mazda Financial Services by the 31st of March 26. Indemnities may be required. Terms apply. Participating dealers. See website.
There's so much more to enjoy when you fly in Emirates Economy. Spacious legroom, delicious regionally inspired meals, complimentary drinks, and with the latest movies, TV shows, music and live sport, some of the best entertainment in the skies. And our family services make your journey simple and fun. Plan your next trip and start the holiday early in Emirates Economy. Fly Emirates, fly better.
Start the new year off right with Halfords' biggest ever January sale. We've got up to 50% off motoring and cycling essentials. So forget new year, new you. Make it new year, new bike. New year, new car tech. New year, new tools even. New year, you get the idea. Pop into your local Halfords store or shop online today for new year, new savings. Offers subject to availability. Full T's and C's and exclusions apply. See Halfords.com for details.
Leading Britain's conversation with Henry Reilly. Alexa, send a comment to LBC.
11:47 the time. Good evening. Lots of breaking news happening in the, well, around the world. Firstly, here in the UK, we know that our Prime Minister has spoken with President Trump this evening. They discussed the joint operation to intercept the Bella One as part of shared efforts to crack down on sanctions busting, recent progress on Ukraine, and the US operation in Venezuela. The Prime Minister also set out his position on Greenland, which you would imagine would be fairly frank. Oh, to be a fly on the wall for that conversation. But we're also turning to this extraordinary and troubling story that has emerged from the United States. A U.S. immigration officer has fatally shot a woman in Minneapolis, is the story. Renee Nicole Good, a 37-year-old U.S. citizen, has been identified as the shooting victim. There are now protests at the scene. The mayor has urged them to show up with peace and don't give them what they want. Well, let's bring into the conversation Jeff Hayden, who's a former Democrat state senator in Minnesota and joins me now. Thank you very much for joining us, Mr. Hayden. Can I firstly get your reaction to events that have happened within your state today? Good evening.
Yeah, good evening, and thank you for having me. I guess I would just say that, you know, the first feeling we had is the same feeling that I had after George Floyd. The place in which the victim was killed is in the same neighborhood, literally a half a mile from where George Floyd was killed. And so quickly in emerging, when you saw the scene and the tape and the immigration authorities shoot her, you started to feel the same way, that same deep, dark feeling that the people who we supposedly trust the most, which is law enforcement, looks and allegedly, and everything that I could see, looks like that they murdered this young woman.
We had a former U.S. Secret Service agent on earlier who said he felt, much like Kristi Noem, the Homeland Security Secretary, that this ICE officer was within their rights to do this, and that what they had seen from the video, and again, I'm not saying this is what they have said, that the person was acting in a way that was intimidating. What's your reading of the video that's been circulating on social media?
Well, you know, I can appreciate law enforcement, but they've had a long history in this country of sticking together in these kind of things and not working against each other. First of all, I think you put the context of ICE has come to Minneapolis 2,000 strong as a retribution because Donald Trump doesn't like Minnesota. He doesn't like Governor Tim Walz, who was his antagonist on the campaign trail. He doesn't like Ilhan Omar, which he has called stupid and has a turban on her head. He doesn't like Somali people, who he says comes from a garbage company. So he are a garbage country.
Yeah.
So he has brought these folks here in their ski mask without telling anybody, supposedly under the guise of getting people who shouldn't be in the country, undocumented immigrants, to leave. And people are reacting to that. These are their neighbors. And so, you know, regardless if you like what the woman did to try to stop the flow of traffic, or to stop her neighbors from being, you know, effectively kidnapped, I don't think that there was a reason for them to use that level of force in order to enforce the law.
You are from the same party as Governor Waltz, Democrats, but also the Democratic Farmer Party, I know as it is, Labour Party in Minnesota. Your experience of these officers, have you come across them as a citizen now?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I don't live far away from the district that I represented. We see them all the time. They're in out-of-state license plates, unmarked license plates. They have masks on their face. They pull over. They surround buildings. They surround restaurants. They stop people in the middle of traffic. They've been known to go to hospitals and get people as they're visiting their loved ones, to go to school as people are dropping off their children. They're an intimidating force. They use pepper or bear spray, we like to call it here. It's a chemical irritant that repels bears. That's what they're using on human beings here. The president himself is using dehumanizing language to talk about human beings. Yeah, it's not pleasant here in Minneapolis, and we're being re-traumatized of what happened to us over 5 years ago with George Floyd.
If we talk about police violence, police actions, depending on how you read each one, we know that there have been 3 on average a day killings by police of people in the last year, if you look at the stats for 2025. How concerning a picture does that paint?
Well, you know, I worked really hard in Minnesota. And let me say this, our mayor, our governor, the chief of police in Minneapolis, the local sheriff, they've done a great job. They have enacted a lot of progressive changes that we had with law enforcement. Our crime is down in Minnesota. Our crime is down in Minneapolis because the way that they're policing is with the community. So we've been working on that here at the local level. The federal government has come in. The ICE agents have come in, and they've totally disrupted that. They've not had a conversation. They're not abiding by the community policing model that I and we and others in Minnesota have set up. They've come in and completely disrupted that. Once again, we were moving away from that. And if you watch the coverage, the chief, the mayor, and the sheriff, and the attorney general, and the governor in Minnesota have all condemned their actions.
Can I ask you, the mayor was, we can't actually use the language he used on a family program here on LBC, but he was very forthright in saying that he wanted ICE out of Minnesota. Do you feel the same?
Absolutely. Absolutely. If they can't come in and be law-abiding citizens, this is law enforcement that's acting above the law. So if they can't come in and be law-abiding citizens and figure out in a surgical and coordinated way to figure out people who shouldn't be here, who have caused mayhem, and to get them out. If they're coming here with a dragnet, if they're coming here shooting innocent members of our community who's trying to stop them from breaking the law, then they should go away. They should go somewhere else.
If we talk about ICE more generally, it's not something we are familiar with in the UK, the US Immigration and Customs Enforcement. What would you say to people who are listening to this, who are saying, well, this sounds like an agency who are going about and trying to do good by rooting out people who shouldn't be in your country? That will be the charge that some on this side of the pond would say. Why do you think they're wrong?
Well, I would suggest this, that normally ICE is around the borders and it would kind of stop people from coming in and out of the borders. That's where you mostly saw them in the south, western part of the United States with our border from Mexico, a little bit in Canada. But what I would say this to the people on that side of the pond, I think the rule of law means something to them too. And it certainly means something to us. And so whoever you are, President of the United States, law enforcement, federal, state, local, and just regular citizens, we have to abide by the rule of law. No one is above that. This group that the president has deputized is coming in here, and they are acting above the law. That causes chaos, that causes mayhem, and that allows innocent people to be killed.
Mr. Hayden, as a Brit listening to the press conference from the Secretary for Homeland Security, Kristi Noem, and indeed the speeches by Tim Walz, I was struck by the political nature of them and noting that Renee Nicole Good, a US citizen, has died, a 37-year-old. There is still politics at play here. Could you touched on it earlier on, but just explain, there is no love lost between Governor Walz and Donald Trump, and they have been feuding for months.
Probably over a year now since Governor Walz was the vice presidential, Democratic vice presidential nominee. You know, I think I've been one to say we should take down the rhetoric. I've been one that says that we should have civil conversations. However, when people are dying, when our citizens are dying, when people are dying at the hands of law enforcement, when law enforcement isn't abiding by the norms of law enforcement that we've established in this city and in this state, then people are pretty upset. And it appears to be political. We know that the president has continued in a very, very, very petty way to go after people who he felt went after him. We've seen him go after district attorneys who have prosecuted him for his crimes in New York. We've seen him go after his political enemies. And so there comes a certain point, I think, that people are saying, especially as Democrats, that when do we continue to turn the other cheek? And when do we kind of start to fight fire with fire and actually go after and call it what it is, which is pettiness and its political retribution? That's what you're hearing.
What should happen next, lastly? Do you think the body cam footage from the FBI should be released? Do you think there should be a full investigation? Should ICE temporarily move out of Minnesota?
Yeah, well, I certainly think that they should move out and stand down. I also think that we should look at the body cams. I also think that I saw Attorney General Ellison say this today. We used to call for a federal investigation in these things. Unfortunately, we can't trust the federal government. The Department of Justice, they used to have a civil rights division that if there was a local or state problem on a law enforcement side, we would call them to investigate that. We can't trust that. So we're going to look to the Minnesota Bureau of Criminal Apprehension, which is our investigative agency. We're going to try to get them to take a look at this as more of an independent look at this issue, as opposed to the FBI, which is shown clearly by their policies and the decisions that they make that people can't trust them.
Thank you for your time. Jeff Hayden joining us live from that state, a former Democrat state senator for Minnesota. Jerry's in Las Vegas in Nevada. Hello, Jerry.
What are we? Good morning to you. Yeah,
yes,
Henry.
Well, it's just about evening here, but go on. What would you like to say?
Yeah, good. Yeah, whatever time it is. Well, correction for the gentleman who called. I can't speak for Minnesota, right? Each state has different rules, regulations, laws. He said to you, ICE, immigration control enforcement, are only based on the borders. That's not true. I had a friend of mine, from an Albanian guy. He had problems. He was married to a woman here, etc. He got picked up. They came around to his house in the morning. He spent 6 months in a county jail.
When was this, Jerry?
When was it? I don't know, 6, 7, 8 years ago.
Okay,
you know. So it's, what he said is false, right? They're a government agency, right? And they will do their job. Their job is to, what you actually mentioned earlier, and he refuted that. And obviously, but the big, you mentioned about the politics.
Yeah.
You mentioned about, sorry, the call coming through.
That's right.
You mentioned about live air, right? Live radio. You mentioned about the politics.
The politics, yeah.
There's a massive investigation going on, serious one, when you're talking hundreds of millions of dollars.
About Tim Walz.
Medicaid fraud.
Yeah.
COVID. And they're finding all these bogus businesses. They're empty buildings. You know, you can imagine. You don't have to be a genius to work it out. And of course, they're putting up barriers to object to the investigation. They're claiming it's all a vendetta.
Well, he's dropped out of the race, hasn't he? I think he said, Tim Walz, that he's not going to seek re-election. And there has been this cloud. Again, I haven't been following it completely closely, but you're right. Somali fraud scandal, as it's been sort of labelled in the media.
Well, Henry, it's to do with you've got bogus empty buildings, so-called childcare. You guys turning up, knocking on the door. Look, if you turned up, you're a reporter, you're experienced, you knocked on the door, that you'd expect to know how you're doing, open up, it's a childcare place, you know, could you show me around? They won't even let you in. There's loads of these. You've got fake transportation, providing a supplementary transportation for people coming in hospitals. They've asked them to produce the books, nothing. Fake offices, so-called producing food bank services, you know, like not soup trucks, but like a particular building you go to. They go to empty buildings. So you're talking, this has been going on for what, 5 or 6 years now, around the COVID time. We're talking hundreds of billions of dollars.
Well, look, I don't know the situation there. I know that there was an investigation done by a reporter, and it looked at one particularly apparently empty daycare site. But look, that's not confirmed, Jerry. But you've put it on the record, and that's not completely confirmed. But nonetheless, thank you for your view on it. More calls in a moment. You're listening to LBC with me, Henry Reilly, and the time is midnight.
On your radio. On the LBC app and
Play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation. This is LBC.
From Global's newsroom at midnight, the woman shot dead by US ICE immigration officers in Minneapolis has been named locally as 37-year-old Renee Nicole Good. Authorities claim she had weaponized her vehicle during an immigration crackdown in the city. Well, US Secretary of Homeland Security Kristi Noem has been speaking to reporters this evening.
ICE agents repeatedly ordered her to get out of the car and to stop obstructing law enforcement, but she refused to obey their commands. She then proceeded to weaponize her vehicle, and she attempted to run a law enforcement officer over. This appears as an attempt to kill or to cause bodily harm to agents, an act of domestic terrorism. The ICE officer, fearing for his life and the other officers around him and the safety of the public, fired defensive shots.
Well, Jeff Hayden, former Democrat state senator for Minnesota, told LBC that the federal government is disrupting the hard work of local officials.
Our crime is down in Minnesota. Our crime is down in Minneapolis because the way that they're policing is with the community. So we've been working on that here at the local level. The federal government has come in, the ICE agents have come in, and they've totally disrupted that. They've not had a conversation. They're not abiding by the community policing model that I and we and others in Minnesota have set up. They've come in and completely disrupted that.
The Defense Secretary says British forces have made the world safer by supporting the US seizure of a Russian-flagged tanker in the North Atlantic.
This is a stark reminder that our world is changing, it is less predictable and more dangerous, and this operation and the Shadow Fleet show the global links between the security threats faced by the UK and its allies.
John Healey told MPs it was part of a Shadow Fleet of ships which transported sanctioned oil. The US Secretary of State says he's planning to meet Danish officials next week to discuss Donald Trump's plans to take control of Greenland. Last night, the White House wouldn't rule out using military action to acquire it for security reasons. And hundreds of Southeast Water customers are again without supplies or suffering with low pressure just weeks after spending 14 days without water. The company has set up bottled water stations in Tunbridge Wells after the freezing weather led to burst pipes. LBC weather, patchy cloud and snow showers in Scotland today, becoming wet and windy for Wales and the southwest throughout the day. Rain will turn to snow for central England and Wales by the evening, a high of 9 degrees. From Global's newsroom for LBC, I'm Daryl Jackson.
This is LBC from Global, leading Britain's conversation with Henry Reilly.
Good morning to you. 3 minutes past 12 is the time you're listening to Henry Reilly here on LBC. We'll keep you updated with that emerging and developing story that is happening in the United States. To remind you, there has been an individual, a woman, who has been killed as a result of being shot by U.S. Immigration and Enforcement, also known as ICE. That individual has been named as 37-year-old Renee Nicole Good, a U.S. citizen. The Department for Homeland Security said it happened as a violent rioter attempted to run over an immigration officer, but that has been disputed by Democrat politicians in the state. We will bring you the very latest on that throughout the program. After your calls, though, and by the way, if you are living in Minnesota or Minneapolis or nearby or have experience of there, would very much like to hear from you if you have experience with ICE, the immigration enforcement. Immigration and Customs Enforcement in the United States, then we will take your calls on that. 0345 6060973 is the number to call. But keen for your views this hour on the new driving rules, particularly when it comes to young people. Young people are saying that the new rules for them are condescending and expensive. The government has proposed learner drivers will wait 6 months between taking their theory test and their practical test. Is that a sensible move, do you think? 0345 6060973 is the number to call. There were calls for the government to introduce graduated driving licenses, which would mean, as it sort of says on the tin, a gradual process whereby you would gain full privileges on the road. So, for example, you might not be able to drive at night at the start, or you might not be able to drive other people in your car because of some of the incidents. 22% of fatalities on Britain's roads last year involved a young person behind the wheel. Is it fair to allow 6 months between someone who takes their provisional and someone who takes, their theory and someone who takes their practical, in your view? Do we need to have stricter tests when it comes to younger people driving? 0345 6060973. That's one age of the age, end of the age spectrum. The other end is with regards to older drivers. And the Transport Secretary, Heidi Alexander, spoke with my colleague Andrew Marr on LBC earlier.
That is one of the proposals that we are looking at, mandatory eye testing for drivers over the age of 70. I have received letters from coroners asking me to look at what the law is in this respect. At the moment, we have a system of voluntary reporting that if you're aware that you have a medical condition that might impair your ability to drive, it is your responsibility to get in touch with the DVLA. Some people might not even know that they've got these medical conditions. It's good for people's wider health to have eye test checks as they get older. We know that eyesight is more likely to deteriorate as you get older. We're also looking at whether we might be able to develop some cognitive tests, given, you know, people's reactions perhaps slow as they get older as well. And I think of my own dad, who at the age of just over 70 has decided to stop driving because he's worried that his reaction times aren't what they used to be. Now, not everyone would make that same judgment about the safety of other people on the road as well as the safety of himself.
Heidi Alexander speaking with Andrew Marr. What of another government minister speaking about young people? Lillian Greenwood, the roads minister, spoke with LBC's Nick Ferrari.
Local transport Lillian Greenwood joining me now. Good to have you on, Minister. We talked a lot about the idea of increased eye tests for those over 70, but that got a lot of publicity yesterday. There's a lot of other measures that you and your colleagues are putting forward. Can you run through some of those? Morning to you.
Yeah, so thanks, Nick, for having me on. We know that around four people every single day are killed on our roads, and progress on this has stalled over the last decade or more. And that's why we're bringing forward this road safety strategy today. And we're aiming to tackle some of the key things that present risk on our roads. So people with poor eyesight, as you've said, we know with more older drivers, we need to be sure people are safe to drive. We're also proposing a minimum learning period for young drivers. So we're consulting on that they would have to be learning for 3 or 6 months after their theory test before they would be eligible to take their driving test. We're consulting on what should be in the syllabus and should they have a required number of practice hours. We want to set people up for a lifetime of safe driving. And so as they're learning, we want them to experience different sorts of roads and different scenarios, driving at night, driving in adverse weather, so that we set them up so that they pass their test first time and that they're safe when they're out on the roads without an instructor or without, you know, a parent or guardian or someone supervising them.
Minister, what is the current average? You say 3 to 6 months. I'm trying to recall. It's a long, long time ago that I took my driving test, but I know when my birthday is. I think I came in at about 5 months. I mean, surely that is the average anyway, isn't it, Minister?
It does vary. You know, obviously some people will pass their driving test just weeks after their 17th birthday. Some people will take those intensive driving courses. We think it's a good idea to build up your skills and experience over a longer period. Particularly, you know, if you start driving in the summer months, we want people to experience driving late at night. We want them to experience driving when it's pouring with rain, because those things do feel different, and it's good to experience those when you're in a supervised, controlled environment rather than experiencing them for the first time when you've passed your test.
Well, let's talk about driving environments, Minister. Would you and your colleagues ever look at the idea of new drivers who've just passed the test being restricted? They can only have one other person in the car with them, or an age limit on the people they might be driving around. You're obviously thinking, or you know where I'm thinking, that a bunch of lads get in a car and sadly it can go tragically wrong.
Well, look, we absolutely have listened to campaigners who are calling for those sorts of forms of graduated driving licence. And it's a really difficult balance, because on the one hand, we want to protect young drivers. We know that they're at greater risk. But on the other, you know, we want to, as far as possible, ensure that they still have opportunities for work and education and social, you know, social opportunities. And we think that we've struck the right balance. We're calling for this minimum learning period. We're also proposing a lower drink drive limit for novice drivers. I absolutely accept that it might be, it's good advice, and I would say, and I said the same to my children, is, you know, don't get in a car with a group of your mates after you've been out to a party, because even if the person not driving, who's driving, you know, hasn't had a drink, we don't want them to be put in that sort of high risk situation.
Lillian Greenwood, the roads minister, speaking with Nick Ferrari on LBC earlier on. Carly Brookfield is head of the Driving Instructors Association and joins me now. Thank you very much for joining us and for staying up so late into the morning. Thank you, Carly. Could I ask you firstly, do young people have a point when they say this is a bit of a rum deal, this is condescending and expensive when it comes to the new changes, in your view?
I get their concern. I truly do. I've got a 15-year-old daughter who will shortly be learning to drive in a couple of years, and she would probably think that this was a nightmare idea because they want everything quick, right? They want everything tomorrow. However, they're saying it's not fair. Is it fair that we have such a rising road accident rate in the UK? And I think ministers are slightly naive if they keep pushing the whole cost of life thing. Of course, it's important to consider the cost of human life in road accidents. I think what has the greater resonance with the people that I speak to, adults and young people learning to drive, is this. It's not just the cost of human life doing nothing about road safety at the moment that is relatively what we do in terms of learning to drive. It's quite a loose framework we have for learning to drive. It's actually the financial cost as well. It costs more than £30 billion a year, road accidents in the UK. That's 2.3% of GDP. So if you're not particularly, you know, worried too much about the risk of your life or someone else's, which people should be, but teenagers aren't necessarily, think about that. The ongoing cost of road accidents on our roads, we've got to do something for that human factor and for that financial cost to GDP.
This new measure, they're consulting on it. It hasn't necessarily been announced it will come in, but 6 months between taking their theory and their practical test for, well, mostly young drivers, but learner drivers, whatever age they are. Is that enough time, do you think? Is that too long? Is it about right?
Well, I'd actually like ministers to consider being a little bit more flexible on that. I know road safety campaigners who don't actually spend a lot of time in the actual coalface of driver education, unlike my members, will think that that's an excellent idea. But I think we have to be pragmatic and realistic about what we can actually do in real life. I think that a modular programme of learning to drive where pupils have to achieve key competencies is a much more pragmatic way of achieving the same goals. So, for example, you could have certain competencies people have to achieve, like driving in adverse weather, like driving with passengers and distractions, and allow people to accumulate those competencies within their own time period, because some pupils will learn at a different rate to others. And I think if we put too much restriction and focus on time, we'll be more focused on racking up hours on a period of time than we will on quality and relevancy of learning.
What about the intensive tests? Is this the end for them, do you think?
Those guys have really had a hard time over the last 5 years. The test waiting times crisis, not being able to get tests, has significantly impacted their business model anyway, because, you know, their business model prevaricated on being able to book tests and pair them with that 5-day intensive training period that they did. So that's kind of started to kill off that approach to learning to drive anyway. There's fundamentally nothing wrong with the intensive driving lesson approach. There, as I said before, there are people that will learn at a faster rate than others, and we should allow some people to progress at that rate that suits their ability. But obviously a meaningful learning period is going to have a further impact, and we've seen a lot of intensive schools go out of business within the last 5 years.
I'm sceptical of the idea of graduated driving licences, mostly because I think if you're qualified to drive on the road, then you should be qualified to drive on all of the roads. But I know there's a big campaign for it. Where are you on that?
I have to admit I'm sceptical as well. And again, I think this comes from the fact that the wider road safety campaigners, whilst I have a sympathy and empathy for those particularly centred in the area of supporting victims of road safety accidents, might have some experience in the impacts of road accidents, but they don't have experience necessarily in what happens at the coalface of driver education on our roads every day. They're not sitting with young people and teaching them to drive every day. And a lot of them weigh in on this subject without that expertise and experience. What we see is the bigger fix does need to be made to the pre-test period. If you bring in restricted licence in isolation, you are literally going after a horse once that stable door has been bolted. You know, we've given them the license and the freedom, they're off. Enforcement has proved difficult in most territories across the world that have brought in graduated licenses.
The only thing I would say is that I recall when I had passed, and actually it wasn't that long ago, it was only 2 years ago that I was a bit of a late one when I got my driving, I did it first time by the way, but when I got my driving lesson and got my my pass, I remember that going on the motorway was obviously something you'd never do in the test, so I was absolutely scared, you know what, to go on the motorway. And then my first drive, I remember driving through the Cotswolds at night thinking, I didn't sign up for this. This is totally pitch black. And so there is an argument that you're not well enough prepared, surely, after having driving lessons.
No, and I'm not, don't get me wrong, I'm not anti a restricted license as a wholesale approach. What I'm anti is seeing that as a silver bullet in isolation. And that lack of consideration of developing the pretest period has been one of the, you know, reasons that I've not been a fan of restricted license in isolation. I think what we have to start looking at is graduated licensing in a true form where you start with the pretest period, you accumulate competence then. The way I liken it is this, that there is the private pilot's license for learning to fly. You get your initial PPL, but then you have to continue and do specific ratings that allow you to fly on instruments in bad weather and in the dark and navigate to certain areas that you couldn't navigate on a basic PPL. I think we should start to look at a more of a PPL version, because let's face it, aviation is far safer than the roads. And we're actually trialling a project like that at the moment on behalf of the Department of Transport. And that's one of the things that they'll consider as part of this consultation is exposing people to a modular program learning to drive, getting them to achieve your key competencies before tests, but then can you add on other competencies that they have to achieve post-test as well, very much like the private pilot's licence process in the UK.
And again, when if I just ask you about another aspect of this, the graduated driving licences, when it comes to a car full of passengers, you know the scenario, Carly, where it will be someone who has just passed, they'll be very excited, they'll be in a car with their mates, the music's blaring, there's people sort of chatting about all sorts, it's very distracting. Do we really want that to happen as soon as someone passes their test?
I'll give you a real-life, real-time example of that now in terms of distraction. My 15-year-old daughter, realism on the radio, has just come down to the lounge and is waving at me to try and put me off what I'm saying. And, you know, and I have to drive her and her friends around late at night when they've been out spending my money. Wow. And that's very distracting for me as an experienced driver. So for young people dealing with their peers in the car, absolutely we have to do something. Now, there's nothing to stop, by the way, us starting to introduce some peer-accompanied training happening in the learning to drive process. We could expose pupils to having those distractions. We used to do a young driver event where we would throw everything at pupils, where we'd have them blasting music, having their friends in the car blasting music and talking at them, to get them to experience what it was like to try and drive. This was obviously done off-road, not on real loads. But if there are things that we can do to simulate that kind of risk and get them to better recognise not only the risk but how it impacts their driving, that's a better way of educating people and readying them for independent driving.
Thank you for your time, despite your daughter waving at you. Carly Brookfield is head of the Driving Instructors Association. Very grateful for you, Carly. Staying up into the early hours for us. More calls on this in a moment. I want to know, cast your mind back. In my case, it's only 2 years ago, but when you did pass your driving test. These new rules, I think very sensible that you have to wait 6 months between your theory test and your practical test. So that's a tick from me. I'm not massively in favour of the idea of a graduated driving licence, because I think you should be ready for the road and ready for whatever happens on the road as soon as you pass. I'm not saying everyone is at the moment, by the way. That's part of my gripe. But driving in pitch black, driving on motorways, driving with cars full of people, this should all be better built into the practical test and to the driving lessons, I would argue. But what say you? How do you think this new system would work? Is 6 months sensible between your theory and your practical test if you're a, I say young people, it mostly is young people, but if you are a new driver? And what of the idea of a graduated driving license? Should it be done in stages like it is in other countries where you start to gain full privileges on the road, such as driving at nights, driving on motorways, driving with a car full of passengers? Or does that defeat the object of having a driving license, a universal one? 0345 6060973 is the number to call. More calls next.
This is LBC.
If you want all the best stories to tell, Best at Travel will provide the inspiration. For 40 years, our UK-based travel experts have been creating tailor-made luxury holidays. We are real people, passionate about making luxury travel personal, helping create your perfect trip. Secure your 2026 holiday today in the Best at Travel New Year sale. You can speak to one of our experts or book online at bestattravel.co.uk. Rated excellent on Trustpilot. Atoll protected.
So, you're geared up for this Making Tax Digital thing?
Sure, I just need some new mud boards, bag of cavity tyres and a couple of lintels.
Hey, MTD, mate, digital taxes.
Mm-hmm, it's an extension down Station Road on the corner.
Dave, digital taxes, mate.
Yeah, I probably will need some 2x4s. I've got to take the van in for a new fan belt, squeaky.
Hey, Making Tax Digital, Dave.
Avoiding MTD,
Sage makes tax simpler for sole traders. Search Sage MTD to get your free software today.
Henry Reilly on LBC. Call 0345 6060973.
12:21 the time. What is not in the driving test, theory or practical, that should be in your view? As someone who only did it 2 years ago, driving at night, and this is how, I mean, I didn't even know how to stick my full beam on the car that I was driving. So that is how unclear it can be. I did pass, by the way. I had a few minors. I had to take my theory test again because I forgot the day it was on. I got a call saying, hello, just to remind you, your theory test is in 2 hours. Is it? I thought it was next month. So that went down terribly. I ended up missing it by a mark because I had to do it again and it was all very stressful. I was actually baking cakes, would you believe it, for Global's Make Some Noise at the time because I was running the marathons. I was also all over the place. Anyway, and I think I would want... I actually think the driving test should be harder. My manoeuvre that I did was just to pull over. That's all I had to do. And I think I didn't have to parallel park. You don't have to go on motorway. I'm not saying you have to go on motorways for your actual test. You're nervous enough. But I think you should be required to go on some sort of motorway, or at least there should be something rather than you going first time on your own. I remember the first time pulling onto the M25 and thinking, obviously, I had my driving test, but I'm thinking, God, I wish I'd done this before. I have got no idea. I wish Brian was with me, my driving instructor, because I'm sort of fairly stuffed. And then I was driving around Cotswolds with my partner, and being the man driving, you're always a bit like, yeah, it's fine, yeah, driving. I was sort of shaking. I was thinking, I've never driven at night, and my lights on the old Renault Clio, are absolutely terrible. So I was nervous. What is not in the driving test that you think should be? Should it be harder? And what of young people, mostly young people, but learner drivers? Do you think the 6 month gap now between a theory test and a practical test is sensible? Should we move towards a graduated scheme in your view? 0345 6060973. And that's if you can get a test, by the way. I'm sure if you're listening to this, you might know a son or daughter or niece or nephew, or maybe even you, who's struggled to get a test. Theory's fine, but an actual practical test booked in is a nightmare. David's a new caller in Newcastle. Hello, David.
Hello.
What would you like to tell me?
Oh, yes. So I just find that this new idea that there should be 6 months wait from the time of the theory to the practical, I think they haven't thought about the fact that there's only 2 years the entire time in order that your theory test will last.
Yes, that's true, before you have to do it again.
Right. That's besides all the money that everything costs altogether. So I don't really understand why make that even less time.
Well, I think the idea would be that you require them, hopefully, to have more lessons with their driving instructor.
Right. Even though I think they should at least give a bit of a longer time span for that.
Do you drive, David?
I do. I passed my test around 6 months ago.
6 months ago?
Yes.
Oh, around. What did you make? How old are you? Could you mind me asking?
I'm 20.
You're 20? Oh, okay. How did you find the test? Was it easier than you thought? I only did it 2 years ago, and I actually thought it was slightly easier than I was expecting.
It wasn't that it was easy. It was just that since I knew what I was doing, the test just passed through because of the capability, as of the amount of lessons that I took. But I don't think they should make it that much harder, though.
Right, okay. And do you drive often?
I do drive often, yes.
Yeah. And what of the idea of a graduated driver? You can now drive with all the sort of glory of, you know, you can go on motorways, you can drive at night. Would it have been sensible if that had been staggered in some way, if you'd started off driving in the day and then when you get a bit used to that, you can drive at night or...
Yeah, I do think they could have added a bit. But if I can add that, I think it would be a plus if the instructor himself would be able to give a say to something to do with the test of how confident the driver is or what type of driving in order to add to the actual examination.
Okay. Is someone singing in the background there?
I can't hear any singing in the background.
Okay. Well, so maybe I'm getting mad. I thought there was.
Sorry, just sometimes my phone plays off a bit.
What, and plays people singing?
No, it's just it's the line has got a bit crackly.
Okay, thank you, David.
No problem.
All the best.
Thank you. Bye.
Who's going to hang up first? David. All right, thanks, David. That wasn't just me, was it? Can we rewind the tape? Well, there surely that wasn't just me. Dale is in Camberwell. Hello, Dale.
Hi, thank you for taking my call.
Great, if your surname was Ian, we could have Ian Dale and Dale Ian.
That would be excellent.
What would you want to say?
I want to give you a quick rundown of an incident that happened to me a few years ago. I'm driving a 7.5-ton truck to Luton, right?
Oh, my goodness.
And
I hope you're being paid to do that.
Oh, yes. It was pouring down with rain. And as I'm approaching Junction 11, there's a two-lane slip from the motorway to come off to the roundabout.
Yeah.
But I'm in a truck, so I can see that both lanes are completely jammed all the way down to the hard shoulder.
Yeah.
This guy in the car behind me has decided to overtake me.
Oh.
And in that moment, I thought to myself, you could never be that stupid. So I put the brakes on. Lo and behold, he's overtaken me in the pouring rain, and then he's cut back in front of me to get onto the slip road that's jammed. But obviously, he can't see past my truck. If I didn't get on the brakes in that moment, he would have bounced all the way from Junction 11 to Junction 12 in his Vauxhall Corsa.
Well, yeah.
So there was some choice language. So I'm suggesting that in the driving test, people should be put in trucks and then made to see, with buses as well, to see how much longer it takes to stop than it does for a car.
Oh, that's interesting. What, put people in those vehicles?
Yes, of course. Not to drive them, just to be in them to get the experience.
Okay, yeah, but you could see just how different it is. So just let me get this straight. So you were coming off the motorway and the...
No, I'm going straight up the motorway. The car behind me is going to overtake me and then come off the motorway.
Sorry, so you weren't going into one of the slip roads?
No.
Oh, I see.
He was.
Right, oh
but
my
he,
goodness.
Being the idiot he is, he overtook me and then wanted to get in a slip lane. And he had to jam on his brakes to get into the slip lane. Which means if I wasn't on my brakes thinking ahead of him, he wouldn't be here.
Well, yeah. Is it too easy, do you think?
Well, I took my driving test in 1987, so I couldn't really... I think the theory test has got some irrelevant questions in it that need to be brushed up. I also think screaming kids in the back of a car, you know, babies screaming, definitely that needs to be looked at.
Well, distractions, full stop, definitely needs to be looked at. Dale, thank you, appreciated. And a bit of a horror story there as well. Pauline is in Dulwich. Hello, Pauline.
Hi, Henry.
What do you think about this?
I think it's a good idea.
Okay.
And I also think that, because obviously it's about competencies as well, I also think that it should be compulsory to do the Pass Plus test after you've passed, which I made my son do.
A plus? Do you know, it's terrible. I've never heard of that.
So basically, after you pass your test, you've got to do 6 modulars and you get a certificate. You have to do nighttime, motoring, and a few other tasks.
Motorway, do you...
Yeah, motorway, night driving. And so you've already passed your test, but you get 6 modulars you have to do.
Is this with a different driving instructor?
It doesn't have to... Only some of them do it,
right,
but you have to just sign up for it. But you also can get a slight discount on your car insurance as well.
Oh, that's good to know. Okay.
And
well, you can never be too safe.
I also made him do some motorway lessons after he passed as well.
Yeah. Well, I think that sounds very sensible. You're a very sensible mum, Pauline. What do you think about the gap itself increasing?
I don't think it's a gap per se, because I think you need to be competent, you know, because at the end of the day, when you pass your test, your driving just starts.
Yes, that is true.
And yeah, because you're learning on the road.
But it sounds like what you have done there with this Pass Plus is essentially a form of graduated driving licence for your son, in the sense that, you know, you do motorways, you do distractions, you do all that later on, rather than from day one.
Yeah, but it's important to do, like, the night time, because it's totally different when you drive at night. And
that's
you
true.
Pass first time. So, you know, sometimes when you pass first time, you can get a sense of kind of overconfident if you're not careful.
And how long did he do it for after he'd passed? Sorry, was it 6 months, did you say?
No, it wasn't 6. I don't think it was 6 months. So I kind of signed him up quite quickly.
Right.
Like a couple of months.
After passing?
After passing.
And then he did it for a couple of months?
Right. No, you just do 6 lessons. 6
lessons, sorry. Got it. Right, okay.
Yeah.
Right, that makes a lot of sense. Thank you, Pauline. Appreciated. Pauline there in Dulwich. More calls in a moment. 0345 6060 973. Your view as to what new drivers should be taught when it comes to the driving licence. More calls on that in a moment. Next.
When people are dying at the hands of law enforcement, when law enforcement isn't abiding by the norms of law enforcement that we've established in this city and in this state, then, yeah, people are pretty upset.
That's the former Democrat state senator for Minnesota, Jeff Hayden, speaking with me earlier on. This developing story that ICE will stay in Minneapolis after the fatal shooting today of a U.S. citizen. The very latest from a reporter in the state next. 12:31 is the time. The news with Daryl Jackson.
The woman fatally shot by a U.S. immigration officer has been named as 37-year-old Renee Nicole Good, a U.S. citizen. The Department of Homeland Security says it happened after a violent rioter allegedly attempted to run over an immigration officer. Kristi Noem, the Homeland Security Secretary, says the officer defensively shot to protect himself. Minneapolis Mayor Jacob Fraze disputed federal officers' accounts of what's happened. The Defence Secretary says British forces have made the world safer by supporting the US seizure of a Russian-flagged tanker in the North Atlantic. Don Healy told MPs the ship was part of a shadow fleet which transported sanctioned oil. And the US Secretary of State says he will meet with Danish officials next week following Donald Trump's renewed threats to annex Greenland. The president's repeatedly said he could take it over for national security reasons. LBC weather, patchy cloud and snow showers in Scotland later, becoming wet and windy for Wales and the southwest. Rain will turn to snow for central England and Wales by the evening, a high of 9 degrees.
This is LBC.
Go on, leave the never-ending laundry pile, quiet flat and empty fridge at home. Hop on the train and go into the workplace zone with Southeastern. Whether you're heading in for a change of scene, to share ideas, or enjoy a lunchtime chat with your colleagues, with our great range of tickets, we've got the one to suit your commute. Buy yours now on our app or website and pay no booking fees. So, go on, go in.
Southeastern.
Wellness. What even is wellness? Cleanses, routines, regimes, biohacks, stacks, schedules, procedures, programs. I suppose so. But can it just be a cup of... Pukka Herbal Tea. Ah, Pukka. Nothing beats nature.
This is LBC with Henry Reilly. Call 0345 6060 973. Text 84850. Alexa, send a comment to LBC.
Your views of driving. This says, I passed 44 years ago. I've never driven on a motorway in all those years. Never will. Rather get stuck at every set of lights. Rachel says, I'm a driving instructor in Liverpool and you can't get a test for 6 months after passing your theory without the driving instructor confirming that the candidate has had enough driving experience that it won't make anyone any better at driving, says Rachel. Felix says, you can get cheaper insurance if you're younger and you do this plus pass, which I didn't know, but it's grateful to Pauline for telling me about that. And Niall says, I was taught to drive by the military 40 years ago. After passing the test, we had extra lessons on dual carriageways, night driving, and how to drive on a skid pad. It was a really comprehensive course indeed. More views on that in a moment. 0345 6060 973 is the number to call. Now let's return to the breaking story that has happened in the last few hours. We heard earlier on a press conference from Kristi Noem, the Homeland Security Secretary, after a 37-year-old woman, Renee Nicole Good, US citizen, was shot in Minneapolis by ICE, Immigration and Custom Enforcement. Delighted to say Matt Sepik joins me, who's correspondent for NPR News based in Minneapolis. Thank you very much for joining us, Matt. Much appreciated. Can you give us the very latest? Because it's descended into a bit of a political row, as far as I can see. But do we have any more details on ICE operating in your state?
Well, they have surged operations here, according to ICE. That's their term. They said that they brought in around 2,000 agents to conduct immigration enforcement operations here. A couple of weeks ago, they had started with several hundred and upped the number here. And this is, as you say, part of a row between our governor, Tim Walz, the governor of Minnesota, who is a Democrat. You may recall that he ran as Kamala Harris's running mate during the 2024 presidential election. He and Republican President Donald Trump have been at odds for some time, and Trump has been targeting Minnesota, not least because it is a democratically led state with increased operations for immigration enforcement. And there's also been a big fraud scandal here that the involving social welfare programs that the president is using to attack our Democratic governor. Now, this particular incident happened this morning around 10 a.m. Central Time. A woman was in her vehicle. It was a Honda SUV parked on a snowy street, a fairly busy one-way street south of downtown Minneapolis. And ICE agents ordered her to get out of the vehicle. She backed up, moved forward, and I'm basing this on what I've seen on two different bystander videos, and attempted to drive away. Now, the Homeland Security Secretary, Kristi Noem, says that the agent shot in self-defense and that the woman struck him. The Department of Homeland Security says calls her a domestic terrorist who was deliberately targeting this agent with his vehicle. But if you look at that video, you can see that she is driving away. She actually turns toward the right and attempts to drive north on this street when the agent opens fire.
How big a story has it been since ICE came to Minneapolis a few weeks ago?
It's been a fairly big story, and it's certainly drawn a lot of news coverage. My colleagues have been busy tracking the various arrests and statements from ICE, as well as the protesters who have been following them around town and taking their license plate numbers and attempting to track them. And as I mentioned, the president up the ante by and DHS up the ante here by surging in their term these extra 2,000 agents just in the last day or so. In fact, Kristi Noem, the Homeland Security Secretary, was in town yesterday for a photo op and news conference, and she flew back today to address this incident.
Do we know much about Renee Nicole Good, the U.S. citizen who was shot?
We're working to learn more, there's a massive vigil happening right now near the scene of the shooting. I have several colleagues there. In fact, they got down there. It was due to start about 90 minutes ago, and they were having trouble finding places to park. I am back at my office, as you can see, just monitoring drone footage, TV coverage of it, and it is a massive, massive turnout. Certainly reminiscent of the protests following the murder of George Floyd 5.5 years ago. I should note that this shooting happened less than a mile of where Mr. Floyd was killed by that police officer in 2020.
It's extraordinary. And we saw the repercussions of that reverberate for many months, years, even to come. Do you imagine we'll see protests continue?
I would imagine so. The governor and mayor urged people to protest peacefully and not give the Trump administration, in their words, the show that they are seeking by inciting this sort of unrest.
Thank you very much for your time. Really interesting to hear your thoughts, and I'm grateful. I know it's a busy time for you. Matt Sepik is correspondent for NPR News based in Minneapolis. 12:40 the time. Richard is in Wickford on the subject of driving. Morning, Richard.
You're right, Henry, how are you?
Yeah, good, thank you, sir. What do you think about this?
Well, like yourself, I passed 4 years ago. I'm 46 now, so obviously I was about 42 when I passed. And personally, I think the theory test, that slightly annoys me, but obviously on the practical side...
Why does it annoy you?
Well, because some of the questions and the way it's designed and everything like that, it's almost like, because it's a paid thing now, they're trying to, the way I see it, is extortionate money out of you. So they set the pass rate at 42% or
43%. It's ridiculous, rate,
43%. And it's like, I've done some research on it, and I've said to a DVSA examiner when I've done my driving test, after when I passed first time, and he said, like, you know, like I explained, like what I'm explaining to you now. I said, oh, if you look at it and the way they do the questions, so on and so forth, and the times of day, you're only allowed to let so many people pass. And he went, you certainly know your stuff, don't you? Like that. And he says, I'm neither going to confirm nor deny, Mr. Morris, but you've passed. You passed with three minors. Thank you very much. Get out of here. And that was it. And,
so, yeah, I think some of the questions are ludicrous. You're right.
They are. I mean, a lot of it, when it comes to driving, you know yourself because you're a new driver like myself.
Ish, yeah.
But, yeah, ish. It's common courtesy, common sense. Yeah, all right. Some people want to drive around like Michael Schumacher and, you know, but if you want to do that, go to a racetrack and do that. There's most probably plenty of boy racers sitting there listening to this thinking, this boy an old fart, this, that and the other. But everybody does it.
Yeah. Of course they do.
You know, everybody's just got to be courteous with everybody. I'm sure you've pulled out in front of someone. I'll admit, I'll put my hands up, I've done it.
Well, we've all done it. On the actual graduated driving licence, what's your thoughts on that? People sort of starting to gain full privileges after a certain period of time?
Well, as in, like...
So you, for instance, motorway, driving at night and driving with a car full of passengers. So you wouldn't be able to do that at the start.
I think that is a good idea. Maybe the car full of passengers, especially for younger drivers. Like you said, I don't want to stand in and stick in the mud, but like as I said, I've listened to your radio station for many years, and there has been some like high profile road collisions that's involved like drivers that have been banned. You know, I think that the whole system needs to be trimmed back, looked at properly, and where you've got maybe an advisory board and maybe bringing in people that pass their tests and giving their thoughts and saying, look, this, you know, I don't know if it'd work or not. You know, I mean, you've got some really good driving instructors out there. They could do that. But yeah, definitely. I mean, especially, I'm not trying to pinpoint younger drivers because everybody's at fault. But if you look at the statistics, you know, there's been high profile crashes where it's involved younger drivers that have been banned.
But the 22% of fatalities on Britain's roads last year involved a young person behind the wheel, so that there are stats to back that up. Richard, thank you. I always remember my mum never let me go. I went to Reading Festival, and my mum didn't let me go in the car with all my mates because she was worried about them driving. And now she's probably quite sensible in hindsight. Curtis is in Exeter. Hello, Curtis.
Henry, hello. How are you?
Curtis, how are you?
Doing very well, thank you. Big fan. And I've been in touch with Nick as well in the morning. So, now, isn't it? Big fan.
The gaffer. Yep.
I've been listening to this, and I'll be honest, I've been driving for 12 years. Look, I passed my test when I was 17, and I'm now 29 years of age. And when it comes down to it, the six-month gap does not make any sense whatsoever. There is a shortage of demand for, obviously, staff members that are actually examiners that can't fulfill or do jobs. There's upcoming people coming up for passing tests and like so. But what I frustrate with is if I waited 6 months for the length of me passing my test, I could not, you know, you got to pay for these tests. You know, on average, I was spending, you know, as a young lad, you know, 35 to 50 quid per hour for these tests, you know. So 6 months is just too long for waiting for a driving test, especially after a theory. It's just bonkers.
I understand your point. All I would say is, does that not force people to stop going for tests when they're clearly not ready and clogging up the whole system? And then also actually ensures that people are sort of practicing their driving in the meantime.
You're right, absolutely. But obviously there's people out there that can't afford that lifestyle to actually have that gap to pay for lessons, you know. And obviously with the 6 month gap, the bit that's frustrating me in a way, and when I'm listening to this and I'm hearing that you know, you pay for extra lessons, obviously with, you know, the highway and everything like so, but I think that really the money situation kicks into these things in reality, and people haven't got the affordability to actually pay for these extra lessons. It's as simple as that.
Thank you for your kind words, Curtis. Much appreciated. Hope this isn't the last time we speak. Call again. Curtis there in Exeter. More calls in a moment. 0345 6060973. Plus, I also want to talk about Elon Musk's X, in particular Grok, which has been undressing people if you are still on the app. And it's not just, I mean, it seems to be mostly targeting women, because that's what people have been doing, but also in some cases children. We'll be speaking with Fevzi Turkoğlu, the editor of Gadget Detective, in a moment. 12:45.
Coming up at 1 on LBC, Richard Spur.
Keir Starmer's pledged to send British troops to Ukraine if a peace deal's reached, but would you support that action? And if Trump were to use the military to take Greenland, should Britain cut its ties with America?
Richard Spur at 1. Listen on our free Global Player app or the new LBC app.
So, you're geared up for this Making Tax Digital thing?
Sure, I just need some new mud boards, bag of cavity tyres and a couple of lintels.
Hey, MTD, mate. Digital taxes.
Mm-hmm. It's an extension down Station Road on the corner.
Dave, digital taxes, mate.
Yeah. I probably will need some 2x4s. I want to go take the van in for a new fan belt. Squeaky.
Hey, Making Tax Digital, Dave.
Avoiding MTD. Sage makes tax simpler for sole traders. Search Sage MTD to get your free software today.
This January at Morrisons, get freshly cut prices on batch cooking till payday. Like a 4-pack of Napolina chopped tomatoes, worth £3. Now £2.50. Or chicken breast fillets, worth £2.65. Now £2.48. That's freshly cut prices at Morrisons.
Morrisons to shop at Morrisons.
Majority of stores subject to availability. Prices may vary online and in Morrisons daily. Tomatoes 4x400 grams, ends 20th of Jan.
Right then, who's all in for Cancer Research UK's Race for Life? Anglers, ramblers, climbers, five-a-siders, surfers, gamers, bikers, hang gliders.
Shh. Book clubbers.
Are we up for it? Let's go all in against cancer. All in to help fund life-saving research. Sign up now and save 30% off entry to your local 3K, 5K, 10K or Pretty Muddy event. Search Race for Life. Discount ends January 31st, 2026. T's and C's apply.
Brands that use radio are 49% more likely to get noticed. Amplify your advertising at radiocentre.org. Assuming you want to get noticed.
Henry Reilly on LBC. Listen on your smart speaker now. Just say, play LBC.
James says, what year did you go to Reading Festival, Henry? I went 2002, 2003, 4, 5, 6, 7, then went back in 10-12. I don't think it was 10-12. It must have been 2012. I went to Reading Festival 2013, I would have been, and the headliner was Fall Out Boy, Eminem, and Biffy Clyro. Or maybe it was Green Day. It was Green Day, Biffy Clyro, and Eminem. I was in Eminem. Lose yourself in the music. Yeah, it was lovely. Eric's in Glasgow. Hello, Eric. Is there anybody out there?
Hello,
Eric.
Hello, how are you doing?
Hello there, sir, how are you?
Marvellous show.
Thank
it's
you.
A marvellous show, then.
Thank you. What would you like to say?
Oh, right. 3 months, is it 3 months you're saying? 3 months and then 6 months for a full driving test?
Eh? Is it what?
We're going for, I think it's 3 months before you do your theory test, a driving test, right?
Yes, I think.
And then, after 6 months, you can get a practical test.
There's meant to be a six-month gap between your theory test and your practical test, is what they're saying.
Right, okie dokie.
Anyway, so, lovely to hear... No, right, okay, what's your point?
Right, okay. So, your emergency workers, your key workers...
Yeah?
The police, fire brigade, nurses, ambulance service, carer, everybody, basically... Is this not going to slow up the economy? Is this not going to slow things up here for not giving people access to a vehicle?
Well, there's such a massive backlog anyway. I think that's different. If you're an advanced driver, that's different. Whereas we're talking here about people who are sort of mostly young and just doing their test. Oh, my goodness. Hello? Eric? Hello? Is everything all right?
Yeah, hello.
Yeah, God, did you drop your phone? Or are you in the Arctic?
No, I'm not in the Arctic. Oh, I'm certainly here.
Is it snowing much in Glasgow?
I'm not in Greenland.
No, well, it sounds like you might be. Is it snowing much in Glasgow?
And see that Vancouver guy that told ISIS
Is it snowing in Glasgow?
Snowing in Glasgow, sir.
Yes, okay. Eric, I like you. I always enjoy our conversations. We're on different spheres tonight. I can tell we're in different... I can't understand where you're going with it. I think we're not vibing tonight, so we'll have to leave it another time. Thank you very much, Eric, there in Glasgow, where I've got no idea if it's snowing still after all of that. 12:50 is the time. Now, I mentioned earlier on another story I was very keen to cover is this this issue with Grok. I mean, issue is actually putting it mildly, that MPs have now called for a boycott of Elon Musk's X over the Grok AI undressing. I covered this when I was in for the breakfast show a fair few days ago, and I was joined by Fevzi Turkulp, the editor of GadgetDetective.com, who regularly helps us with these matters. Fevzi Turkulp joins me again now. Since we last spoke, Fevzi, it's interesting. All we had before was a fairly toothless response from Ofcom. Now we have MPs intervening. It seems like more is being done.
Yeah, in fact, we have Liz Kendall, who's the technology secretary, has also intervened in this, and she's urged action under the Online Safety Act, and Ofcom have made urgent contact with XAI, the people who make Grok, asking them to check compliance with UK laws. This is a product of the design. Okay, this is an AI system that's marketed as being less censored, free speech platform, and they've allowed people to upload photographs of real people and then to edit them. And one of the things that they allow that others don't allow is images of well-known people. So you can do celebrity deepfakes, political deepfakes, all sorts of things. At the moment, people seem to be making non-consensual sexualized content, so they're getting normal pictures of well-known people.
Well, and I read as well that some young women who play child characters in the Netflix show Stranger Things are among the thousands of images being generated in the last few days.
Yeah, in fact, the Internet Watch Foundation found sexual imagery of children on the dark web that appears to have been generated by Grok, according to them. So, it's really not good enough to allow it to produce it and say, well, we'll take it down when it's reported. That's not good enough.
As you pointed out when we last spoke, Elon Musk had sort of been joking about this because I think people had asked for him to be put in a bikini and he found it all very hilarious. We had an apology, but from Grok, which, as you pointed out, is not a sentient being and so cannot really be sorry. Have we heard anything from the bigwigs at X with regards to this?
They put out a fairly bland statement saying that they take things down when they encounter it, and they ban people permanently. But that doesn't mean anything because you can open a new account in moments. So being banned is no great shakes. The people who are doing this are well capable of going through that. But it's just, they want a different culture. They want an edgier AI. And actually, the reality is all AIs are edgy, if I can put it in that way. Mm. But the Grok has fewer guardrails to filter what comes out. So I think we discussed before, it's actually quite hard to stop an AI from complying with a prompt or a request, except that you can put filters on its output. So sometimes you see it creating something inappropriate, even on other AI systems, and then it and then it gets blanked because the filters cut in and stop it. And where it's going badly wrong is that these filters don't seem to be, well, I was going to say they don't seem to be effective, but I don't know that they're designed to be that effective.
Yeah. The Women Inequalities Committee in Parliament have decided they will come off the app, they'll come off X. It's hardly sort of the Prime Minister doing it, but is that going to be the start, do you think, of people coming off? I asked you this last week, and you didn't seem completely convinced. Have you changed your mind?
I just think that they'll just have a different user profile, right? Just for every person that leaves in disgust, probably two more will join in hope. I don't think they'll lose business over it, to be honest with you. They're making their brand, and they're trying not they're getting as close to the line as they can get away with, and obviously sometimes going over the line as well.
In business news, I was reading Elon Musk's XAI has announced it's raised $20 billion amid the backlash over the Grok deepfakes. The artificial intelligence company run by Elon Musk has raised $20 billion in the latest funding round. The startup announced on Tuesday, even despite the marquee chatbox Grok facing a huge backlash over the sexualized non-consensual images of women and underage girls. It doesn't seem to be putting off investors, worryingly.
Well, because it actually, if you look at it from a technical standpoint, it's a very capable AI.
Right.
And it's got a lot of aid. I don't know how they're monetizing it quite exactly, because the free tier that's available is quite extensive. You know, it doesn't cut you off very early in terms of, you know, just giving you a few prompts and then say, right, now pay. It's quite hard to hit the limits on Grok. So, but as an AI system, it's quite advanced. It can do some things rather well. You know, they all have slightly different strengths and they all leapfrog each other over time. But, you know, some of the sort of PhD level mathematics and so forth, it does quite well.
Mm. Where does this go next, do you think, Fevzi, lastly?
I think we're going to learn that Ofcom is doesn't have what it takes to rein in the likes of Grok. I just don't see it. And particularly, don't forget, we've got President Trump, saying that the Europeans should not be regulating these technologies, that they want to keep their AI lead, and that the Europeans are trying to hold it back. I don't think this is an example of an AI lead, but the Trump presidency is quite aggressive about fines from European countries.
Thank you, Fevzi, as always. Fevzi Turkoğlu is editor of GadgetDetective.com and a podcast by the same name as well. Marla is in Rickmansworth to finish us off. Hello, Marla.
Hello. How are you?
Very well, thank you. What do you make about driving, these new driving changes?
Well, I think it's rather sad because, at the moment, the new changes, well, I went under the old system and I passed probably the second time, which is not brilliant, but I did pass second time. Wow. But right now, you have to do theory, and then they're saying wait for 6 months before you do your practical. Now, first of all, the validity of the theory is only 2 years, which means after 6 months, within 18 months, you have to, literally pass. And if you don't, then you can have 1, 2, 3 attempts, and you know how difficult it is at the moment for people to get, into the system to even just apply for the test. And it's quite difficult. And if mostly these driving tests are being done by young people, right, they don't have the money. They're obviously either being paid by their parents, or they're working, or they've just come off, university or whatever age group that is. It's not... it's not easy for them to pay for these things, right? Making that 6 months extra doesn't help. And how are they going to monitor that somebody hasn't...
Well, but you want people to be the best drivers they can be if they're going to be driving on the roads, don't we?
They will be best drivers because they have this thing. Once you pass the test, you get a P thing on there, on the car. And people can know that these people are learners. They can be careful of them. And, people don't just pass tests like that. They are tough tests. Even the theories test are tough. And I know people say it's easy, but it's not. Depending on the examiner, it can be tough. Just because one person had it easy, perhaps, I think you said it yours was an easy test, right? But it's not always easy for everybody. They can fail you on the smallest of the things, which means you have to reapply, pay for it, and it's just another way for government to make money. That's the way I see it.
Okay, well...
this is our people's government, or I really don't think so.
Strong views from Rickmansworth to finish us off. Marla, thank you for calling in. That is it from me. I'm going to be back with you tonight at 10 if you're not already sick of me. If you miss any of the show, you can listen back or catch up on our free Global Player app or the brand new LBC app, where you can stay up to date with all of the latest news and opinion, put your news categories in the order you want, pause, rewind live radio, and listen to a range of podcasts. That's the brand new official LBC app. Download it from your app store for free now. At 4 on LBC, it's Ian Payne, but right now he's not AI. It's time for Richard Spur.
Certainly not. Still to come, a Cambridge college is going to target students from a group of elite private schools, including Eton and Winchester, to improve the quality of its applicants. It's a backlash against years of so-called reverse discrimination designed to encourage more state school pupils. I'll be asking whether you think that's fair. But first, over 130 officers and staff in the Metropolitan Police Force have been found by review over a 10-year period to have committed crimes, including two cases of serial rape. It's another massive blow to the reputation of the force, and it's been put down to their not being properly vetted. So this morning, do you trust the police where you live? And what needs to happen to restore public faith in them when you call 0345 6060 973.
On your radio, on the LBC app, and
Play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation, this is LBC.
From Global's newsroom at 1 o'clock, the woman fatally shot by a US immigration officer in Minneapolis has been named as 37-year-old Renee Nicole Good, a US citizen. The Department of Homeland Security says it happened after she allegedly attempted to run over an immigration officer. Kristi Noem, the Homeland Security Secretary, says the officer defensively shot to protect himself. Matt Sepik, a correspondent for NPR News based in Minneapolis, told LBC a vigil has taken place in the city.
It is a massive, massive turnout, certainly reminiscent of the protests following the murder of George Floyd 5.5 years ago. I should note that this shooting happened less than a mile of where Mr. Floyd was killed by that police officer in 2020.
Sir Keir Starmer set out his position on Greenland in a phone call with the American president. US officials have suggested America use military force to take over the island nation, which is under the jurisdiction of Denmark. Donald Trump says he wants the territory to protect the US from threats from China and Russia, but the prime minister says people there should decide their future. A review has found more than 130 Metropolitan Police officers committed crimes or misconduct after they weren't properly vetted. The Met opened a review into vetting procedures following the case of firearms officer Wayne Cousins, who was convicted of the kidnap and murder of Sarah Everett. Stephen Roberts, former head of the Met's Directorate of Professional Standards, told LBC that urgent action's needed.
Police service will always attract, potentially, people who are utterly unsuitable. It will attract people who are unhealthily authoritarian. It will attract people who are dishonest. And it will attract people who simply want to run around carrying a gun. Now, those people need to be weeded out.
A law coming in today means dating apps will be forced to find and block unwanted nude images from reaching users. One in three teenage girls have been victims of so-called